too well.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the October 6th regularly scheduled meeting of the Morro Bay Planning Commission. It's the light's on, but I don't hear anything. Are we now we're live? Okay. Thank you. Once again, good evening and welcome to tonight's Morro Bay Planning Commission meeting. We will start our meeting as let the record reflect that all commissioners are present and the meeting is called to order, and we will start with a moment of silence, as is our custom. Thank you very much. If you'll all rise and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. This is the time for any announcements from the Planning Commission. Are there anyone have something they'd like to? Richard.
Yes, I would like to let the public know that the Surfboard Art Festival is going around, and you could go to the various businesses and check it out. My favorite is at the Founders Bank. It's my wife's project.
You kind of had to say that, didn't you?
Yeah. It's avant-garde continuum.
So, okay, Richard can go home tonight. So, thank you. Any other public, any other announcements? No. So, this is a time for public comment. We'd love to hear from any members of the public on items that are not on the agenda this evening. There will be public comment for each agenda item as well. So anyone who'd like to speak on something that's not on tonight's agenda, please come forward, give us your name, and we'd be happy to hear from you. Well, I don't see a huge stampede, so we'll bring it back to the commission and move on to our consent calendar. We have two items on the consent calendar this evening, a resolution from last meeting and our current and advanced planning list. Are there any comments on either one of those? Would anyone like to pull one, or do I have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
Move to approve the consent calendar.
Second?
I'll second it.
So we have a motion and a second. No discussion, I assume. So we can just do a voice vote on this. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Carries 4-1. Okay. So then we'll move on for our public hearing calendar. Item number B1 is case number UP0-359. This is continued from the March 3rd, 2015 Planning Commission hearing. Does anyone have an ex parte communication to report on this item? No. So seeing none, we can proceed with the staff report. And I think Cindy's going to talk to us a little bit about this.
Thank you. Good evening, Chairperson Teft and members of the Planning Commission. This is conditional use permit UP0359. We were prepared to present this for public hearing tonight, and we received a request for a continuance from the applicant on October 1st. The applicant is requesting a continuance to make further design changes to the project. They're going to be changing the project description and making some other improvements, and so they're requesting a continuance to a date uncertain. We've left it open because staff is requesting time to allow those plans to come in. We don't know when they'll come in, but staff and the various departments will need time to review the plans. And then one last thing, you did receive a letter on your desk, and it's just a general correspondence that we received from a neighbor, and there are copies for the public. So with that, since it was a duly noticed public hearing, staff would just recommend that you open the public hearing in case there were anyone that came. Thank you.
Absolutely. This is a public hearing, even though there's a request to continue. So anyone who'd like to speak on item B1, now would be the time. Okay. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to commission. Are there any questions for staff on this? Yeah. So I just have kind of a general question. Cindy, this has been continued now for 7 months already, and is there any conflict with the lease terms in terms of when they're required to submit a proposal?
Staff did talk to Harbor Department about that. They do have some pending lease deadlines, but the changes that they're proposing to make to the project will be minor enough that they won't conflict with their lease deadlines.
Okay. Okay. Good. So with that, are there any other questions or discussion on this item? Do we have a motion to continue?
I move we continue to a date uncertain.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion, a second. Any discussion on the motion? Then could we have a roll call on this one?
Certainly. Commissioner Lucas.
Aye.
Commissioner Sadowski.
Aye.
Commissioner Luer.
Yes.
Commissioner Sorensen.
Aye.
Chairperson Teft.
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0. Thank you.
Thank you. So then we will move forward to item number B2, which is case number CP0-419 and UP0-383 involving a site at 3420 Toro Lane. This is also an item continued from the 818 Planning Commission hearing. Does anyone have any additional ex parte communication to report on this?
Yeah, I talked with the applicant's representative over the phone.
Okay, I have none. So then let's move forward, and we'll ask Whitney to fill us in.
Good evening, commissioners. So you did, as you mentioned, review this project on the 18th of August and continued it with direction. This is a request to construct a single-family residence with an attached garage on a vacant lot, coastal lot with designated environmentally sensitive habitat, or ESH, as I may refer to it, at 3420 Toro Lane. The applicants are proposing construction of a 1,580-square-foot single-story house with an attached garage and approximately 240 square feet of patio area. Plans show a 50-foot ESH buffer from the coastal dune habitat and a 25-foot buffer from the edge of the stream corridor. So the Planning Commission reviewed this in August and continued with direction. The applicants have since revised their plans in response to your direction, which was to briefly minimize grading at the western end of the site, explore the use of a common driveway, alter the architectural treatment, especially along the northerly property line, and provide a conceptual plan showing a rerouted coastal trail. So this next slide is just sort of an orientation slide. You've all been there, seen it. This is the existing site. This is the site plan. And I just would note that this area here was the area where you directed them to do less grading. They have since take in a retaining wall that used to extend beyond the patio along this property, this southerly property line, and wrapped it at the end of the patio and reduced grading in that yard area beyond. And I'll let, perhaps I'll defer to the architect if you have further technical questions about that particular revision. And these were some section drawings that Mr. Parker may want to refer to, and if he needs to explain anything further about grading out there. The second direction was to explore the notion of a common driveway with, oops, let's go back here, with the, let's see, with this adjacent lot right here. So as you remember, the right-of-way is not developed. Here's roughly the edge of pavement, and then there's some undeveloped right-of-way between the lot and the pavement. And so direction was to think about maybe these two lots would share some access. The applicants are not really interested in providing a common driveway at this time. The adjacent lot does have access from Yerba Buena, and it may be really premature to require a common driveway at this time since there are no development plans for that adjacent lot. And so then it's kind of hard to see what the best configuration might be. Staff's recommendation is that this idea be explored at the time plans are submitted for development on that adjacent lot. Let's see what else we have here. These were the previous colors and materials. You had given direction to sort of further develop the architecture, and a good deal of effort was put into that. So the new color materials show a change of roof material from shingles to tile. There is a much more pronounced eave line proposed. A slight change in the overall color palette, and some very significant changes to the window treatment. This is a rendering that kind of begins to show the change at the eave line. There have also been some changes to the roof, the line of the roof in the center part of the building, and I have some elevation plans that might show that better. This also begins to show that they're proposing to recess the foundation approximately 4 feet along this northerly property line. And as you can see, there's a kind of a it shows the conceptual trail in this rendering. One of the biggest changes, though, had to do with the window treatment, which is way different than it was previously. So this is, again, a rendering from the beach side. There were some minor changes to the floor plan, but really nothing much at the exterior of the footprint. The footprint is essentially the same. The next slides go through... let me just go back here. A few elevations and section drawings. So I just arranged these quickly. The upper left corner is what the previous plan showed, and the lower right-hand corner is more current plans. And what do I have here on my little notes? The change of the eaves. You begin to glimpse the cantilevered floor. That's pretty much the main change there. From the beach or rear elevation, you can see that the roof line has changed to eliminate some of the gables. There were just a number of kind of stacked gables going out there, so some of those have been combined, and the window treatment is obviously quite a bit different. You also see the cantilever sun and those corbels underneath there. See what I on this northern elevation. I just would probably direct your attention mainly to the windows right now, and you can see that has changed significantly. What else do we have there? Well, the recessed foundation again, and also the different roof line. It's a bit simplified from all that those series of gables. And then on the south side, not quite so many changes, but the entry is sort of more reinforced, enlarged a little bit, and there are some window changes, especially toward the west side where the arched window has been eliminated. And at the sections now, you can see in the lower slide, the lower picture there, the cantilever, which kind of recesses the foundation as, you know, completely away from the edge of the bluff somewhat. And further in, again, you see the recessed foundation as well as the little side gable that's been added. So then your final direction to them had to do with showing a rerouted coastal access, conceptually at least, on the plans. And the site plan that you have does show that. It's sort of the darker, see if I can get my little guy going here, this line this way. So logically rerouted to the north of the building and to the more northerly side of the lot. The existing trail, a little harder for me to track from here, kind of comes down through like that. So staff understands that the applicants have been working with some members of a local trail maintenance volunteer group. They're referred to as the Black Hill Gang, to identify like the best location and design for a replacement trail on this site. These volunteers work on Black Hill and in Montana Doro under the auspices of the California Department of Parks and Recreation. And I hope that in your packet you have a letter from Mr. Bob Mason. Did you all receive that? Okay. That just sort of explains a little bit further who they are and how they've been looking at this project. So just continuing along with coastal access, this is just an aerial view from Google. And at the north end, like this is the project site and trail. At the north end, you can kind of see, I'm sorry, this isn't really contrasting enough, the North Point parking area. There's stairs going down to the beach there. This is kind of up a little bit higher aerial view, which shows the site's approximately right there, which shows the Morro Strand State Park and camping facility just sort of to the south of this site. And then closer in, the site's pretty much at the top of the screen. That's Yerba Buena coming down and then feeding down into the park. And they're just numerous. It's just kind of, there are numerous trails right there. And as you know, since you've been out to the site. I have, let me see if there's anything else I need to. Well, I just wanted to note that in our resolution, it reflects the project with an access trail. So the findings and conditions reflect what's being proposed here by the applicant. Still, though, in staff's assessment, coastal access is not really the issue or necessary at this site, given nearby access routes. But that will be for you to review and talk about and determine. Should you find that access is not necessary, we have some different language for the resolution if we get to that point. I have some remaining slides that relate to other issues that were discussed with this project. There's zoning compliance. We can come back to that if we need to. But the whole Coastal Canyon Bluff issue, I think we settled that last time. Just an exhibit for sea level rise showing the finished floor of the home sits quite a bit above kind of the worst case scenario there. I have the habitat map exhibit that shows the little coastal dune area and the stream corridor, and just how the buffers for the coastal dune and then down here for the proposed 25-foot buffer from the stream corridor really do begin to constrain development on this site. This was the conceptual restoration area exhibit that was given to us at the last meeting. And there we have it. So this project is asking for approval of a coastal development permit and a conditional use permit. It was also subject, as you know, to environmental review, and so you have a mitigated negative declaration to adopt. Those mitigation measures are attached as attachment one to the resolution. Staff is recommending approval of the project, and I will try and answer your questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Whitney, are there any questions from the commission for staff at this time? I have one, and it's just that I'm not clear on this, and perhaps everybody else is, but one of the conditions that has been proposed is that the applicant would submit an offer to dedicate a public access. Now, how is dedicating a public access different from providing an easement for public access? Or are they the same?
It's effectively the same, but you make the offer of dedication, and then the city or some other third party public entity could accept it. It'll be the offer language will be crafted to allow for that. I think the idea would be if they offered it up, though, probably that we would accept it. And in fact, our LCP probably mandates that we do. So if we didn't, Coastal Commission at some point would be, you know, requesting that we do accept it.
So then when that offer to dedicate is made and accepted, how does that impact, who then is responsible for maintenance, and how does that impact liability for accidents or whatever?
Whitney, I think you gave them the revised language for the condition, but ultimately we revised the language of some of these to make it very clear that it's going to be an unmaintained trail. Okay. And we're probably going to post it to that effect if we do end up accepting it. That was at the direction of the city attorney to avoid liability issues.
So. Okay. Thank you. But the city would be like first in line in terms of liability then?
The city's always going to be first
really
in line for
know.
Things yeah. like that. Yeah. Yes. There is immunity related to these types of prosecutions for public access trails. Typically, you have to have some sort of, you know, if the city was maintaining, it'd probably be a bigger issue because we were maintaining it and someone got hurt on it, then we didn't maintain it well enough. And there's probably an argument there. If we're not maintaining, it's a sign that we're not maintaining it. Someone injures himself on it. You were forewarned.
Right.
So that was kind of the conversation that we had with the city attorney.
Okay.
Which is
Thank
why
you.
We are suggesting some changes to the language.
Thank you.
Appreciate
and Mr.
That.
Commissioner, if I may, I neglected to tell you that I had put up there in front of you the some revised language for the resolution.
Yeah. And I admit, Whitney, I'm looking at the old language still. Are there any other questions for staff at this point? So then this is a public hearing. We'd like to open it up for the public to speak. Typically, we offer the first opportunity to the applicant or applicant's representative. So please come forward and let us hear from you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Teft, Commissioners, Rachel Covesdi, appearing on behalf of the applicants. And I'm going to grab Whitney's clicker for a second. We have what I hope will be a brief presentation for you tonight, speaking directly to the comments and suggestions that were made last time we were here back in August. So as Whitney enumerated, you gave us some direction to minimize grading and disturbance seaward of the proposed residence. modify architectural treatments and provide a more attractive set of elevations and renderings, provide a realigned public access to the beach, and explore the combined driveway with the parcel to the south. The parcel to the south is actually under different ownership. The parcel in question that on which the project is proposed is owned by Greg and Jeannie Fry. The parcel to the south of that is owned by kind of a conglomerate of various family members and trusts, some of beneficiaries, trustees, some of whom are out of state. So it's kind of an apples and oranges ownership situation. And secondarily, there's also no proposed project or development on that southern parcel. So we didn't believe that this was the appropriate venue for exploring that option. So as Whitney described, specifically per your direction, our architect has turned the retaining wall along the southern property edge 90 degrees to follow the line of the patio, thus saving approximately 20 to 23 feet of disturbance seaward of the patio area. This is the proposed trail alignment, and this has again been developed with help from the California Department of Conservation and the California Department of Parks and Rec. So we'll go into that in more detail later. The grades on this proposed trail range from about 6% to 18%. And obviously working within a highly constrained site, but here we are. And now I'm going to ask Chris Parker, the project architect, to walk you through some of his changes that he made to make this place even more attractive.
Good evening, Commission. Chris Parker. Just to kind of briefly go through, and Whitney kind of covered a lot of the changes already. But just to kind of walk through what we've dealt with, the main change along the north facade is the cantilever of the floor, allowing some of the natural grade to remain and tuck underneath the house and kind of break up the tall aspect of some of the walls and the blankness of some of the walls. We did make some floor plan changes to account for that, and also, as Whitney mentioned, to kind of consolidate some of the roofs. We did some angled walls along the rear of the property there that allowed us to consolidate some of those gable roofs, and kind of allowed for some taller windows to break up that facade as well. Both in the dining area and in the office up front, we added a bay window. Little pop out there to help break up those walls. And then the main changes also would be the facade treatments, concrete tile roofing, and a slight stucco color change, a change to the eaves, the use of the copper gutters. We recessed the windows 2 inches and basically gave them an angled or a tapered stucco edge along the top and sides, and then we are placing a precast seals on them as well. And then obviously the use of the trail coming in. This kind of shows the treatment of the eave with the copper gutter and the recessed windows. And then underneath the cantilever, we're also calling out some corbels to help break that up a little bit as well. So we have a little bit of a detail on that. And then again, the window treatment, kind of recessing the window a couple inches to add a little bit more work to that. And I'll pass it back. There you go.
So hopefully that has answered many of your concerns regarding the architectural articulation of the structure. And now we're going to move back into the public trail discussion. As you know, these applicants, first choice was to retain the ESH buffer in its entirety for habitat restoration and enhancement. And sadly, we've gotten kind of some mixed reviews on that. I think that that everybody will agree that there are abundant access points here. However, based upon some public comment and some things that have been submitted both to you and to the Coastal Commission, the Coastal Commission staff has also asked us to all look at a realigned trail. So the Coastal Act does have twin mandates. One is to maximize public access, and their objective within the Coastal Act, and this has been repeated in policy documents since 1976 when the Coastal Act was adopted, is to have an access point to the beach every 500 feet. And, of course, the second and equally important mandate is to protect habitat and natural resources on the coast as well. So we've also discussed prescriptive rights. I'd like to point out that Dr. Teft has done what I think is an exhaustive job. I only got to look at this for the first time a few days ago, and I was truly impressed by that effort. That was Herculean indeed. But in any case, that is not an option for discussion tonight. That is adjudicated through the court system, and the CDP moves independent of any prescriptive right process. So, speaking of mixed direction, just reminding everyone of the response that we did receive from the Coastal Commission. They were very pleased with the conformance to visual resource protection, biological resource protection and setbacks, coastal geology and bluff setbacks. And again, Mark Johnson, their longtime geologist, reviewed our methodology very clearly and carefully. And then they asked us and the city to analyze the feasibility and environmental impacts associated with the realigned trail. Again, this is a review, but there are 20 points of access within one-third of a mile of the site. From North Point to Morrow Strand, there are 6 points of access with fairly similar topography within 500 feet. Again, Dr. Teft did a much more comprehensive job of evaluating those trails than did I, and that's in Exhibit G in your packet. So here is a close-up of the site with the house staked. So you can see where the trail basically bisects the existing parcel and where it would come alongside the north side of the house and then meet up with the existing trail seaward of the house. So it would be, and of course this would be a restored riparian and dune habitat area as well. So what you're seeing now is just raw dirt with some annual grasslands on it. This would be a trail very carefully constructed and cut into an enhanced wildlife corridor. Again, this is the alignment. And the two questions that the applicant would like you to consider tonight, and I think staff has already done this. Staff has done a stellar job with this pretty complex project. But currently, Planning Condition 19 reads, prior to issuance of a building permit, the dedication and city or other public entity's acceptance of the public access trail shall be recorded. There's a lot of case law in the California courts specifically dealing with CEQA, although I know that there have also been some coastal cases in which basically this is this type of a condition it has been found unenforceable because there's a third-party action required. So we would, and clearly this one I think puts the applicants in an untenable position because they're free to offer the trail dedication, but we can't twist the city's arms or another governmental agency to accept it. So we've asked for alternative language that simply scraps the acceptance portion. Prior to issuance of a building permit, the offer of dedication of the public access trail shall be recorded. This allows the applicants to offer the trail for dedication and obviously work with the city or another public agency to have that accepted, but doesn't give us an unenforceable, untenable condition. It's very much like saying, you can, here's your CDP, you can pull your building permit as soon as the guy three doors down removes his shoreline protection device. Well, as much as we'd like that to happen, that's not something that we can facilitate. So that was one of our questions. And then the second one, and I believe that Whitney has already taken care of this as well, is that planning condition 16 makes the ESH fencing seem required. And the California Department of Fish and Wildlife has suggested they actually like the natural habitat to be unfenced with limited disturbance, including fencing. But they said if we were going to fence the property, that they would prefer it to be at the buffer line close to the house, low and open, rather than a 6-foot solid fence at the property line where nobody could actually get to the habitat, much less access, which is, of course, not their concern. So my understanding is that that condition has been scrapped in its entirety.
I can clarify that when we are done with applicant's presentation.
Thank you, thank you. So that is it. With those two requests, we just are looking forward to a determination tonight. And Chris Parker and I are available for any questions. And I know that the applicant, Greg Fry, would like a word with you as well. I will invite him up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, commissioners. I want to, first of all, just thank a few people. First of all, our friends and family that have showed up in support tonight and are out in the audience. The second is just the planning staff. The amount of time that they've put into this is significant, and I appreciate the effort and ability to communicate with them as openly as they have been. And then lastly, just the commissioners, the items that you listed last meeting to review, actually I think turned out very well in a couple of respects. The first is that I really think we have ended up with a much nicer project that probably wouldn't have happened unless you brought it to our attention. And the second is just the opportunity to resolve just some issues with our neighbor Bill McLennan, and we've just had the chance to resolve those things, and I really appreciate the fact that we were able to do that. I think that's a wonderful thing, being able to live next to our neighbors and really enjoy them. So I do want to thank both Bill and Glenn also for being there, and then we've also got our neighbors Robert and Paula Coomer here, and so I think it's going to be a great environment. So I think that those things were facilitated by the decision last meeting. And the last thing I do want to mention is the trail. That is a difficult thing. We had initially just felt that protection of the ESH would be a higher priority, but we are certainly willing to do anything that that the staff here or the Coastal Commission feel would be beneficial. And so I have met with Bob Mason and William Kasner. They both work with the California Department of Parks and Recreation, and they actually are ages 73 and 72. So I've met with them on several occasions. We went out to the site. They hiked up and down. They brought out their inclinometers to gauge what we were looking at, and both of them felt that the realignment would be an easy process. And so the goal is to, however this moves forward, is to create a trail that is environmentally sensitive, that also follows the guidelines of the California Department of Parks Trail Handbook. And so, and the last thing is, through this whole process, I have had the opportunity to learn a great deal, And I've also had the opportunity to meet a lot of just great people. So hopefully it is our request that that you would be able to make a decision tonight so that we can move forward on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fry. And if you and Mr. Parker and Ms. Kubeski could hang around, we may have questions at the end of the public comment period. Let's open it up to the rest of the public. Anyone else who'd like to speak on this issue, please come forward.
I always have to do this. Hi, my name is Laura. So good evening, Commission. I'm a friend. I'm a owner on Shasta, so I'm a Morro Bay resident. And I
excuse me, could
really
we get your last name too, please?
Yes, Cogan with a C, C-O-G-A-N. Yeah.
And I am Victoria Arthur. I live here in Morro Bay.
And I just wanted to say how impressed I am with the beauty of this project that my friends are putting together, and also the beauty of them as people. I really feel like they've been sensitive and proactive, sensitive to the environment, sensitive to all the needs considered, and also proactive for their own needs, but proactive for the needs of all the entities and people considered. So I'm impressed with that, and I'm very much in favor of going ahead with building. So thank you for your consideration.
I also very much support the whole project and appreciate the new plans and the new ideas.
Thank you very much. Who else would like to speak?
Go ahead.
Oh, knock yourself out. Nope.
I'm Phil Voth, and I live here in Morro Bay, and I fully support the Fries and what they're doing, and I agree, too, with the new elevation changes are really good. So, anyway, thank you.
Good evening. My name is Betty Winholtz. I want to speak to a few technical issues that I don't know have been addressed. I did send an email to the commission early this morning, and so I apologize for the short notice. A couple of them were spurred by the Coastal Commission latest letter, and one of them had to do with the top of the stream bed and how that was delineated and whether or not it had concurrence from U.S. Fish and Game and California Fish and Game, because that was not in any of the appendices that I saw in the staff report. And that is a requirement. And so I'm wondering, obviously there was some discussion with them, but that particular issue was not addressed, and technically it has to be addressed by them. Also, the idea of the buildable area, I don't know where that's defined at or if it's in a picture. We haven't really talked about that. Maybe it was talked about at the last meeting after I left, but if you could redefine that for me, I'd like to know where that is. And my third and last issue was having to do with the geologist, and he had mentioned that his study was done prior to and without knowledge of the load and configuration of what was going to be on this bluff. And I don't know how one understands stability without knowing those things. So he can certainly address what is in the current, but how does that going to be addressed as these other things are now in a configured place and surely they know the loads, but there's no updated information about that. And then as a trail user and someone that's concerned about cutting into the bluff to create a new trail, how does that affect the stability of the coastal dune as well? And so I don't know how that interplays with each other, and maybe it doesn't, but it seems to me that those are safety issues that need to be addressed. I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Carol Rains, and
Just wanted to stand in 100% support of the Fries. I don't know them personally, but my husband and I do walk that stretch of beach on a daily basis. We visited the project site today and quite honestly don't see any need for any other access to that stretch of beach. As I said, for 15 years we've walked it and had no problem parking in the designated parking areas and using the designated stairways that are in beautiful repair and easily accessed. But just basically support of their project. We just look forward to seeing it be built and enjoy it all the way along. And thank you all very much.
Thank you. Any other public comment at this time? No. Okay. So seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring it back to commission. But before we do, does the commission have any questions for the applicant or the applicant's representative?
Maybe for staff. Whitney, can you respond to Ms. Winholt's comments about the stream and the verification by the other agencies?
Okay, so the top of bank, I believe, was originally determined and then later surveyed by Mike Stanton, but determined by Rick Gorman according to our definition for top of bank, and that. I don't know. I mean, they determined it based on our definition. That delineation was reviewed by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and the U.S. Department of Fish and Wildlife twice, in fact. They looked at that in addition to the rest of the project, essentially more directly from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. We were basically told that this, while this is a policy in our local coastal plan, it is not a priority for them, and they don't feel that that really is their jurisdiction. If someone were proposing to alter a stream bed, that would very much be in their jurisdiction. If a project were proposing to impact a listed species in a stream corridor area, that would very much be in their jurisdiction. They otherwise were honestly not concerned about it. And I suspect when we do our update, we may just do away with that altogether. After, of course, consulting with them. but that has been kind of the feedback that we've gotten from them several times.
According to this plan, the applicants will construct the trail in this configuration.
In that configuration, or as close to it as they deem works well, given the park standards that they're going to try and construct to.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't see the standards. What is is there going to be a paving on this trail? Is it going to be compacted DG, or do you have a section for it?
I understand it's just going to be an at-grade trail. If I'm wrong, the applicant can clarify something different.
Okay, maybe if the applicant could come forward, please.
Hello again, Rachel Covesdi, for the applicants. So I'd like to clarify actually a few things. Number one, this will be an at-grade trail. So per the Parks Department and Conservation Department standards, this is going to be, they don't like cut and fill trails because, of course, the fill slope always degrades and erodes mm-hmm. over time. So they like a cut bench, very narrow, and then just very gently compact the native material. So not adding anything, certainly no paving, no DG. So this will be on a compacted sand trail. Again, very informal. We're not promising ADA accessibility or anything like that. It's going to be a very informal trail. I also wanted to reinforce what Whitney response about the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife responses to this project. If you remember, and you probably don't, it wasn't that worthwhile. In my previous presentation, I actually had pulled out quotes from their response letters stating that they had no concerns with this project, that they felt that Kevin Merck and his biology team had done an excellent job demarcating top of bank, the willow area, all of the various habitat areas that would be under their jurisdiction. So they signed off on that completely. In terms of the question on geologic stability, there were a number of geotechnical reports that were prepared for this project. I think that Ms. Winhold was speaking specifically to a slope stability study, which does not take into effect any loading, because that's simply stability of the existing slope given wave run up and sea level rise and those sorts of things. There was a separate geotechnical report which did in fact speak directly to the load-bearing capacity of the site and geotechnical recommendations in terms of footing, depth, and site preparation work and those sorts of things. So that was, again, fully evaluated both by your staff and by the Coastal Commission geologist Mark Johnson. And that goes, again, for the claim that the cut for the trail may somehow undermine the slope stability on the site. Again, the cut we're talking about is 18 inches, give or take. It's a very superficial cut and would have no bearing on any slope stability that's been analyzed to date.
And do you have an agreement with Bob Mason for routine maintenance or?
So this, as I think your staff has made clear, this will be an unmaintained trail. Mm-hmm. So neither the city nor the applicants will be maintaining this trail once it's constructed. Although I have a feeling that Dr. Fry may be out there, despite my best efforts, cleaning it up just because it's his property and he wants it to look beautiful and be fantastic all the time. But in any case, it will in fact be marked as an unmaintained trail. Use at your own risk. That sort of thing will be posted.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the applicant? Okay, so let's close public comment, bring it back to the commission for discussion.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to thank the applicant for responding to the commission's various requests. I think it is a better project than we saw a couple of weeks ago. Regarding the trail, I do not believe that the trail is necessary through that property. I think there are many more access points for the coastal to enjoy the coast and the beach, and I really support reef vegetation and habitat. So I don't believe that they need to put a trail on there, and I believe that they should just revegetate and rehabitate the vegetation that's there.
Thank you.
Yeah. My concerns with the trail and with creating the trail are this is an access point, and it's traditionally, historically has been an access. So I would support the trail, and I would support its present configuration. I think it's a compromise to what was there, and what and that what will be there to allow, and also to allow the property rights of the applicant to construct their home there. So I think it's a decent configuration. And there are there were people using this trail through the years. I've seen them. I've actually gone down it a couple times, not recently, but so I don't think it's an undue hardship, and I also think it's probably going to be proactive to kind of maybe short circuit some court action in the future to do a preemptive easement on it, prescriptive easement. I'm sorry. I think the changes were, the elevations were better than what we saw the first time. As far as the geological slope stability and carrying capability of the underlying structure, the geologist typically comes in early in a project and assesses the overall site stability. Then he gives his parameters, which is later followed up in other geotechnical calculations from the soils engineer and from the structural engineer. So those will all be reviewed in the permitting process. So I don't have any concerns about that, although it was good to bring up the to clarify that. So, so I'm basically, I think the trail is a welcome addition, and it's a compromise from the applicant and for the community.
Richard.
Staying on the subject with trails, one of the things that I had the opportunity of spending some time in Hawaii recently, in Maui, particularly with my grandson's families there. But I spoke to many sovereign Hawaiians there, and they don't have a coastal commission. And one of the biggest issues there is access and view sheds. There's the privatization going on cliffs and view sheds over there in Maui. So I think that we need to be very careful and not marginalize the access issue. However, I would like to maybe get into a little bit of dialogue with the staff. And I'd like to go a little history now. This lot, historically, there was, going back, was this ever the two lots adjacent, were they one lot at one time?
This property was subdivided in 1972. That whole, what is now two lots, was one lot, and the city of Morro Bay approved a subdivision to enable the configuration that we have now.
Okay. I mentioned this issue before, and I kind of followed up with a little bit of research. We are in an environment right now that we are, the data that's coming in with regards to sea level rise and climate change, when you take those two into account, you have the bluff. The bluffs, and where are they defined? We have bluff setbacks for the beach, shore, and then we have bluff setbacks for stream. And I took a note of the CCC's geologist when he looked into this. So I did a little research, and I left a message for him, and I haven't gotten back information from him. But he wrote a paper back in 2003 in addressing, mentioning sea level rise. This is back 2003, of the issue of erosion. Now, marine erosion or coastal erosion, if it's subject to wave erosion, then that's a coastal bluff, okay? And what we have here, and there's evidence of the king tides and everything else, having the setback, minimizing setbacks or redefining them. Okay, what we have is a 25-foot setback with this particular project, if I'm not mistaken, with regards to the stream. But it is a it's an issue that I have with this project as a whole when you're addressing these emergency issues and not it kind of puts it in a pickle here because the city by lagging with the LCPs and lagging with these issues, we're put in a position where here's an applicant that has a piece of property and we have, when I look at it, we have issues where what is the setback that it should be? And when I look at this, I see a problem with, if you want to define that, that is a, that's a, that setback I think should be 50 feet all around, which will in turn make it an unbuildable lot, almost, unless you combine the other lot. So when you have that kind of situation, it just makes it difficult. I just want to, other than, I just wanted to put that out there. That's all I have to say right now.
I appreciate Mr. Fry's comment about the process has made it a better project. I think it's a better project, too. We had a lot of discussion last time about the access. We had a lot of testimony about the access, so I'm not going to go back and say I don't understand that. I think we need the access. I think the Fry's will appreciate the access, and so I appreciate that the project was designed around accommodating the access. I have to admit I was giddy in a way when I looked at the iPad version because I misinterpreted the surface as being shingles. So I'm not as big a fan of stucco here as I would be shingles, especially with the big brackets coming out, which suggest a frame kind of construction instead of a heavier one. But I'm not going to worry about that. I think the elevations are significantly better. I appreciate what you did with taking into account the concerns of your neighbor. And I think in some ways, when you drive these piles into the hill or drill the piles into the hill, it's actually going to be more stable in a lot of ways than it will be versus what it was before. I think there's going to be added stability for keeping the thing intact, especially in the wind, dry conditions. And I think when the landscape's healed you know, the trail's in, it's brought back, it's going to be a very nice frame to that opening there. So I think it's progressed pretty significantly.
Well, I share everyone else's comments in terms of the changes in the design. I think aesthetically they look very nice. I'm conflicted a little bit on the whole access issue, but I think what we have is what we've arrived at is what we always strive for, which is kind of a middle ground here. You know, I think it's fortunate. I think it's very generous that the Fry's are willing voluntarily to offer this dedication of access. I'm not sure at all that we would be able to require it were that not the case. I'm not sure if we did require it how well that would fare. Going through the judicial process because there is a lot of alternate access in the area and there's a lot of quality access which is at least as easily maneuvered as the access on this site. So, you know, I'm just grateful that we're not in the position of having to require that. And I like the amended language to the conditions that indicate that this is a voluntary dedication. I certainly understand the applicant's representative's point about deleting the condition that the city accept the dedication, because she's right, they can't make the city accept it. So I would certainly be in favor of that change. In terms of the geology of the site, I mean, it's a sloped site. You know, like 95% of the sites in Morro Bay. this is not the city staff's first time out of the gate on this. They've dealt with slope stability over and over and over again in the community, and I have confidence that they will be able to do so in this case. I do have one question for staff. There is a drainage easement having to do with the storm drain. Does the city have, and it exists. It's not part of this development, but does the city have access for maintenance and repairs and as part of that easement?
Yes, I believe they do. That is the city's easement. Okay. They inherited it basically from Caltrans when the city incorporated.
Right.
It abuts the city's right of way. It abuts the city's right of way.
Right. So you have access that way too.
The easement runs into it.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure that was not something we needed to clean up at this point. So, and in terms of the easement regarding the Esha, that would be a conservation easement, right? That's basically what we're talking about. Okay. I think the changes that have been made are appropriate. I think that I agree with Commissioner Lure that the offer to dedicate is probably a good strategic move down the road. But I still think it's a fairly generous thing to do, and I'm basically prepared to support the project.
I would like to say that I am not in favor of conditioning the project for the trail. I think that if it is voluntary, it is generous, and I think it would be a good thing for the community, but I don't believe that we should any way condition our approval in the project for the trail.
Okay. I get the sense the commission is would like to be more active than that, though, in terms of noting the dedication as a condition.
I guess my feeling is this is a really unique site in that it is a stream end, but it's been extremely modified by the city or whoever it was, improvements there. So we're not looking at a pristine natural site. We're looking at something that has recovered on its own after it's been extremely manipulated. And so I think I don't get the sense that the restoration work is necessarily an aesthetic enhancement over the trail itself. I think the trail's there now. And I can see lots of reasons why the owner wouldn't want to walk however far it is down the road to get to the next access point, as well as there may be a benefit to personnel monitoring the stream there, either the condition of the culvert or if we have a flood condition. It's helpful to have the access, I think. I think there's lots of practical reasons as well as the inertia from the commentary that came in the last hearing. I mean, I went into the last hearing not necessarily feeling one way or the other, but I was moved by the testimony of the public of the affection for the trail. So I think in this case it's a site that's already been manipulated. It's going to be manipulated again, and then the owner is generously restoring habitat back to some viable, sustainable, restorative condition, which I think is admirable. So I'm for the trail.
Richard?
Regarding the trail, I think there's enough community voice to merit having one.
Well, I'm not prepared to hold up the project for the trail, but I do want, I don't believe, I still don't think that we should condition the project, but if my four other commissioners feel that strongly, I'll go ahead and accept it.
Jerry, do you want to weigh in on that? Or?
As staff, do we have the language that that works with the applicant and with the legal entities to, because it seems like we need to amend the language, especially item number 19, or is that correct?
We do want to strike the language in there that that requires the city to accept it prior to issuance of the building permit. We don't have an acceptance process in Morro Bay that allows it to be done at the staff level, so it has to be accepted by the city council. Okay. So there could be delays in there. So I think it's a completely reasonable request. I think on the part of the city, we would pursue it because I think that's what's expected. Sometimes there can be delays in that processing because you have to get it on agenda.
Okay. But we could approve the project as designed and as presented.
Yeah, we gave you proposed conditions. We would like those conditions to be used versus the one that are in your packet. With the alteration of the one.
With item number 19.
Yep. Right, Whitney.
And then striking of number 16. And in lieu of that, I had added language to condition 10 regarding the ESH easement. That's the last sentence. Easement boundaries shall be clearly delineated to the satisfaction of the community development manager. That's going to happen anyway, pretty much with recording of the easement, but out on the site, it might be helpful. It's going to probably be fairly obvious. Or you could strike that if you want. But the fencing did come from a suggestion from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife that said, if you're going to do any fencing on the site, you might want to, consider putting it at the edge of the ESH boundary. But it wasn't a requirement. And
okay. Yeah. It seems like having a delineation there just to denote that, okay, beyond here, there'll be dragons, that there shouldn't be patio furniture out there and stuff like that, and not that there would be, but
that would all be addressed in the conservation easement, though, so it's okay. Almost overkill.
Okay.
The only thing, I had a problem with the fencing language, too, because I mean, I think there needs to be some flexibility, because there's a fair length there where sort of the wall of the house sort of defines
that
boundary of the easement. And it would be silly to have a fence right up against the house, Right. So
we could strike condition. My suggestion was then to just go ahead and strike condition 16.
Yeah.
And you can add that that last sentence to condition 10 if you choose or not.
I also wanted to address one of the comments by Commissioner Sadowski related to the setback to the bluff. You said they should follow the 50-foot setback requirement, and the house does meet the ocean bluff 50-foot setback. Just so we're clear, the only portion that the buffer that's being reduced is to the creek. So just for clarification purpose.
Huh. Yeah.
Okay, I guess there's any other discussion or
the only thing I want to mention is there were some communications I know I received from a citizen about conditioning the trail be built first, and it is conditioned that the trail is built before occupancy, and that makes much more sense in terms of the construction phasing of the project. So I'm happy with the language that the trail is in place before occupancy.
We wouldn't want the trail in place first. We'd end up closing it down all the time while it was under construction. The house footprint's too close to where the trail would be, and they'd be reconstructing it constantly.
Yeah, and just to bring up the point to answer that this is a pristine site, that trail was there because it was a tank track to get to the beach. So, you know, we have history to...
A tank?
Yeah.
As in Army tanks?
Army tanks for military maneuvers.
It's a skinny tank.
It was a wider trail.
Interesting.
So, okay, let me see if I can get this right. I'll make a motion to approve resolution number PC 28-15 regarding CPO-417 and UPO-383 at 3420 Toro Lane, with the deletion of item number 16 and the planning conditions, and with the amended language to item number 19 in the planning conditions.
Striking.
Last phrase on 10, I think, was added. Was that added, Whitney?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
On number 10, is that last phrase added? Highlighted in yellow.
The last sentence highlighted in yellow is added if you choose to add that.
Well, it leaves it up to the community development manager as to how that would be delineated. So, you know, having a geotechnical marker or a GPS marker on site could be delineation. It doesn't have to be a barbed wire fence. So I would like to see that remain, and then we leave it up to his discretion.
But I think we have to accept the modifications to items 10, 19, 20, 21, 22, and 23, correct?
Correct.
That is what we were proposing, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought this was the proposed conditions that were in this packet.
But it's different from...
From what was
amended conditions in the packet to reflect what you're looking at right now, and then now we're amending those.
Okay.
A little bit further to major amendments, fairly minor.
Okay, then we'll accept those. Accept the items number 19, 20, 21, 20, 22, and 23 as in the proposed amended conditions.
And I think also deleting the language and the city's or other public entity's acceptance of the public access trail.
Yeah, that was
from 19.
That was included, yeah.
Okay.
We got that.
I'll second.
Okay. So proposed.
And I'll still second.
We have a motion on the table. We have a second. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, could we have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Luer.
Yes.
Commissioner Lucas.
Aye.
Commissioner Sadowski.
No.
Commissioner Sorensen.
Aye.
Chairman Tuft.
Yes.
Motion passes 4-1. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay.
I'd just like to, could I state something? I'd just like to commend the public on both sides on their comments and stuff. It's good to get feedback so we can make informed decisions.
I'll second that comment. Thank you. Okay. How are we doing? Does anyone need a break? Or are we? I'm going to get a break. So. Well, yeah. I'm okay.
So we're moving on to, we'll move on to case number B3, which is case number CP0-410 and UP0-369. And I'll start by just asking if anyone has an ex parte communication to reveal.
I received an email from Kathy Novak.
This is 289 Main Street.
I had some email exchanges with the owner's rep.
And I had a telephone communication with her also.
Okay. Well, I had no communication, but I am going to need to recuse myself from this item, so I will pass the chair over to Catherine Sorensen for discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe, Cindy, you're on for this one.
Thank you. If I could ask AGP to come out and put the PowerPoint presentation on. Okay, thank you. Good evening again, commissioners. This is agenda item B3 for 289 Main Street. This is a public hearing item that was continued from the September 1st Planning Commission meeting. It's a request for a coastal development permit and conditional use permit for new single-family residence on a vacant parcel, case number CP0410 and UP0369. So just to start out, to be clear, the proposed development under review before you, as I said, is a new single-family home on a vacant lot, and it is proposed to be 3,386 square foot home. I say on the PowerPoint presentation it's three levels. I will get to that later when I show you the floor plan. Essentially, it's a two-story home with a basement square footage. That basement square footage is included in the 3,386. That represents both conditioned space and unconditioned space. The applicant's basement level is showing as unconditioned space. The project also includes a 520 square foot two-car garage. They are proposing a guest parking space for the home. The code does not require a guest parking space, but they are offering it as part of the proposal. It also includes 356 square feet of decking on two separate decks, which I will discuss in some later slides. And I would like to point out that in the exhibits that include the applicant's representative letters, they call out that the two separate decks comprise a total of 319 square feet, but the architect's plans say 356 square feet, and so staff went with the higher number because it was on the architectural plans. And there's also a 236 square foot covered porch, which is immediately adjacent to the kitchen on the first floor. So at the September 1st Planning Commission meeting, the Planning Commission reviewed the proposal and continued the hearing to this October 6th meeting. Planning Commission's direction to the applicant comprised four actions. And I will restate them. Number one, accurately calculate lot coverage, excluding that portion of the driveway dedicated to the common driveway. Correct the square footage of the home to include not only the lower story basement square foot, or excuse me, to include the lower story basement square footage, which they did, both one and two. And then three, revise plans to show a shortened or reduced deck along the south elevation, which would also four, reduce scale and mass along the west elevation of the home, that portion of the property which faces the Tidelands Park parking lot. Before I go on, so as discussed in the staff report that you have read, the bulk and scale changes that the Planning Commission requested of the applicant could have been accomplished in a number of ways. The applicant did resubmit plans to staff after the meeting. And as I said, they sought to address these concerns. They did. Plans have been revised to correct the lot coverage, which now totals at 34%, covering all items on the parcel. They did exclude that portion of the common driveway from the lot coverage calculations. They did correct the square footage of the home. They did reduce the size of the square foot deck. It was approximately 800 square feet and change. And as I said, they have reduced it. It was one large deck, and it's been reduced to two smaller decks. The fourth item, which would be the subject of my presentation, is reducing the scale and mass of the home. And I will present some slides for you to show what the applicant has submitted as far as the goal to reduce the bulk scale and mass. This is a slide just to point out to the commissioners that the square footage of the home has not changed. This is a slide from the last Planning Commission meeting, which shows that it meets all of the zoning ordinance standards. This is the applicant's proposed site plan, and while it is hard to read, I will show you a landscape slide that will be a little bit easier to read. Okay, here's the red pointer. So on the right side of the image is the portion of the lot that faces Main Street, and on the left side of the image is the portion of the lot that faces Tidelands Park. And you can see this is a slope lot by the contour intervals here. The driveway ends about here, and then the home goes back, and then it zigzags in along the west elevation. This, where I am pointing right now, there is a triangle-shaped deck that's proposed, and then off the office and living room, and then a second deck off the master bedroom. And I'll show you some better slides in a moment. And this is shows a little bit more clarity to what you're looking at the site plan. And after preparing this PowerPoint presentation, it came to staff's attention that the plans that you have before you did not include in a revision to the landscape plan. So should at the conclusion of the hearing, the Planning Commission choose to approve the project, staff would like to recommend for your consideration that planning condition number 8, which asks for a water management plan to be submitted prior to building permit issuance, that also include revised landscape plans consistent with the site development plans that are approved. This still shows the one large deck here that I'm pointing to. So this is a slide image that was taken from the September 1st meeting. So here's the proposed floor plan, and I've outlined in red the two decks. So as I said, this one is off the living room, and that is an office there, I believe. And then this is the master bedroom. They do not connect. The master bedroom deck does have a set of stairs that would lead into the backyard. This is the original floor plan, also highlights in red what the original deck looked like, and then the revised deck. Okay, so just moving right along, I'm going to go through the floor plans and then the elevations, and then I'll get to the discussion on bulk and scale. The second floor plan, there was no changes made to the second floor. And then this shows an image of the basement plan. This shows the staircase leading down to the basement, and they're calling out a basement to be used as a rec room and a wine cellar. No changes. This shows the revised elevation that was submitted after the last Planning Commission meeting. As you can see from the original, no changes other than you see this area right here where you see the deck. So, oops, I went the wrong way. Original and revised. And then here is the new west elevation, and that was the original one. So as you can see here, the deck extended westward quite a bit. And then as revised, they have shortened it by approximately 500 square feet, from 800 and change to about 350 if you combine the two decks.
And then the revised north elevation and original, and no changes to the north elevation. South elevation, so here you will see the deck off of the master bedroom with the staircase that I talked about, and then this is the other deck. It's kind of hard to view the triangular shape of the deck because it's not three-dimensional. And then this is the original deck. Again, it's not three-dimensional, so you can't see if this was three-dimensional. You know, 3D glasses, and it would be, you know, poking you in the face. Just kidding. So street view image. The proposed home, this is a slide that was presented at the last meeting. The home would be in this area. And just so you could have a little bit more current imagery, this is a picture that was taken on September 1st. So it shows that a previously approved home, 279 Main, is looks like it was recently, building permit was recently issued. And then a previous home approved by the Planning Commission in 2012. Actually, it's this one here, green. And that was approved and has since been built. The applicant did submit revised visual simulations so that a planning commission can see the original versus revised. This is the original simulation from the west looking at Tidelands Park. And, okay, so this is the existing lot today. And I will show you a magnified one so it's a little easier to see. So vacant lot and then proposed original home as Planning Commission reviewed on September 1st. Excuse me, I have to catch up on my paper notes here. And then here is the revised simulation. And so let's go back. Original. So in the original, here was the deck. Oops, wrong way, sorry. And then revised, and I promise I'll show you a magnified version. So here's the magnified, just so it's a little bit easier for you to read. So the deck, and the deck's smaller now. Now, oddly enough, the tree's not in the exact same location, so it's a little, you kind of have to, like, follow the deck. So here's the staircase. Oops, sorry. I'm trying to talk and press buttons at the same time. okay. Original. Oops, sorry. I will get this. Okay. Let me start over. Original. Revised. Original. Revised. There we go. Okay. I will leave it on the revised and catch up with my notes here. So, as I stated earlier, the request by Planning Commission to reduce the bulk and scale could have been accomplished in a number of ways. Some of the comments discussed by the Planning Commission at the meeting had to do with the number of roofline ridges on the property. Many of the roofline ridges, and staff counted approximately 5 roofline ridges that run parallel to the bay that create a bulk issue. Stepping down the home on the west elevation so that steps it down and reduces the bulk. Some other options could have been keep the garage at the current height and lower the remaining of the home, or lowering the home and the garage. Essentially, the applicant's resubmittal, as you see in the plans that I've shown you, the slides, applicant's resubmittal only reflects changes to the deck. So they have significantly responded in the form of revising the deck. The applicant's response letter also noted that to change some of these other issues that were discussed by the Planning Commission would not be feasible for a number of reasons, and those are detailed out in exhibits in the staff report. Excuse me. Changing the roof orientation would be detrimental to the project because to do so would increase the height of the home, causing it to exceed the height limit. That was one argument. The applicant's response to the Planning Commission's discussion about stepping down the home the applicant's response interpreted this as changing it to a split-level home. However, when staff reviewed the plans, there was insufficient detail on the grading plan to determine whether this, in fact,
whether any, there was insufficient detail related to grade to determine the impact of whether or not that would truly be infeasible or not. The applicant also stated in the response letter that it would be impossible to lower the home because it would create non-code compliant driveway turnaround, increasing costs to the project. The applicant has stated that the home has been designed with certain needs for the applicant that is mostly single level. However, staff's review of the plan showed that that's not, in fact, what is designed, given that it is a two-story home with a basement level. And, in fact, there is also insufficient detail, as discussed in the staff report, to determine whether or not it actually meets building code definition of a basement, which is if it's more than 50% below grade, as discussed on a earlier project. Lastly, the applicant also concluded that the property location and the view from Tidelands Park is not part of a scenic view shed that has been identified in the city's LCP and thus should not be subject to view corridor requirements. However, the Planning Commission's discussion regarding reducing the bulk and scale of the home, however, is reflective of the city's policies regarding recently adopted residential design guidelines. Essentially, staff's review of the resubmittal found that the applicant's resubmittal falls short of effectively addressing the Planning Commission's concerns. Although the project does meet general plan LCP and zoning ordinance requirements for new construction of a single family home, it is within the Planning Commission's authority to review the project and determine if the proposed changes to the home meet the direction that was given by the Planning Commission to the applicant. So, therefore, staff has a staff recommendation for approval, but staff is also listed, given the analysis and given the direction of the continuance, staff has laid out three alternate options. Staff's recommendation would be adopt Planning Commission Resolution 3915 as with an amendment to Planning Condition Number 8 regarding landscaping for plans dated September 23rd, 2015. Alternatively, option number 2, Planning Commission could review the project and add additional conditions. Option number 3, Planning Commission could choose to continue the hearing to request additional project changes and revisit this project at a later hearing date. Or option 4, deny the project and direct staff to return with a resolution for denial. And one last thing that I would like to point out, and I did put this in the staff report, there was some questions from the Planning Commission at the last meeting regarding the project's history relative to past parcel map action. Staff did go through the record and found that although this was thought to be part of a previous parcel map application, it was determined actually not to have been a part of the 2008 parcel map application. That parcel map action actually created what is now known today as 279 and 281 Main Street, both of which have been entitled and either built or are currently under construction. And with that, that concludes my presentation. I'm available to answer any questions.
Do any of the commissioners have questions for staff?
I guess, Cindy, the question that I have is the nature of this basement. You know, because my understanding is it's a one-story zone, the first 50 feet back, or is it two stories?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part.
Is that initial 50-foot setback from the, is it the bluff setback, is meant to be one story, correct? Or is
that
it two stories?
That is correct.
Yeah. So when we've got a habitable basement with three-foot windows that almost opens, well, on the south side, it's significantly lower to grade. It appears to be a habitable room, even though it's not conditioned. It's not a traditional basement, tiny window up above grade. It appears in bulk to be two stories from Tidelands because of that. And so my question is in fact, the nature of the way that element is shown, is it a two-story proposal at that point?
Regarding the bluff issue, so as we discussed at the last Planning Commission, the question about whether or not this property is a bluff ultimately came back inconclusive. Staff consulted with Mark Johnson with the Coastal Commission, and there wasn't enough historical records to determine whether or not it is in fact a bluff and therefore subject to bluff standards. The city's LCP maps are not the most illustrative, so it appears to show on the map that there is an area where there's bluffs from the north, and then it stops in this area, and then it becomes bluff again, which is the reason staff reached out to Coastal Commission, because, of course, they certified our LCP. So after going through that exercise, the applicant decided to design a project that met the bluff development standards, even though there was no determination on whether, in fact, they were subject to it. So, but yes, you know, if they are within that first 50 feet, it's limited to no more than 14 feet or up to 17 feet within that area.
But it doesn't say one story. It just says a height restriction, height limit.
My coworkers can correct me if I'm wrong, the bluff expert here, but I believe it doesn't. I believe it's silent on stories. I think it just says 17 feet.
Okay. So the issue whether that's a two-story in the front isn't significant relative to the way the code is written. It's only significant in terms of the appearance of bulk that we might have discretion on.
I believe so, but I can check that in the code as we're discussing this.
Thanks.
So it does, it just speaks to height. It doesn't identify stories.
One item that you talked about that was a issue with the developer is the turnaround. Okay, what can you elaborate on what was that was about?
Sure. So when the city approved a parcel map application in 2008 for 279 and 281 Main, they also approved a common driveway, which benefited this lot in question today, 289 Main, because otherwise it would have been landlocked. However, at the time, and no planning staff that works here today was there then, but what we have discerned from the record is that it appears that fire department did not get the standard access that they normally would have gotten when the driveway was built and they did their turnaround testing. They relied on overhang of a portion of the driveway, and that's why you see that fire condition in the resolution before you tonight. So they were relying on that to meet their fire turnaround, their turning radius. I don't know. Did that answer your question?
Yeah. So correct me if I'm wrong then. Based on it's a private road, right? Based on that information and the fire department's approval, they had that parcel map in 2-8 that they changed, and it's okay. Now, is the city interested, okay, in, and this is my understanding, that there was some interest of having access to Tidelands to continue the road, this private road can continue all the way down to the Embarcadero eventually. Would that be something that might be visited and allowing to, that's one of my issues. Okay. I have this little issue because the thing is as being a first responder, not a fire, but, you know, these are, nobody wants to hear about it until there's a problem, okay? So that's one issue. The other issue is the bulk and scale. This is my feelings. When I don't necessarily agree that this is only...
Perhaps we should wait when...
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And just continue with staff questions. Any other questions for you for staff?
No.
Okay. Jerry?
No.
Okay. At this time, I'd like to open it for public comment. Kathy?
Good evening, Vice Chair Sorensen and Commissioners. My name is Kathy Novak, and I'm here tonight representing the Huffs for their home at 289 Main Street. In the intervening time since we were here last, we've had a chance to do what the Commission had asked, which was to consider modifications to the project and see what we can do. For my presentation tonight, I would like to address those items. First, you asked that we revise the lot coverage calculations to include the sheds and delete the accessway. This has been done, and the lot coverage is now 34%, as staff has noted in their report. Second was to revise the title sheet home square footage numbers. We have shown the square footage on the home of the home as it relates to the conditioned and unconditioned space as well as the total square footage. So there is no question regarding the total or gross square footage of the house as indicated on the plans. Staff notes in your report that the plans do not contain enough information to determine whether the basement is actually a basement. However, that was not the question that was raised by the Commission at the last meeting. The question was concerning whether this area should be included in the overall conditioned space of the house. In my response letter to staff on this issue, we said that the basement is not proposing to have any heating or cooling, which would then change that space to a conditioned space. I further said to address that issue that the Huffs are willing to accept a condition of approval that the basement will not have any heating or cooling, and I certainly hope that clarifies your issue. Third was to redesign the deck on the southern side as suggested by the Commission. As noted in your staff report, the deck has changed and been reduced by approximately 503 square feet and has changed from a single deck to two decks, approximately 226 square feet off the living room and 93 square feet off the master bedroom. The one additional item that I would like to mention, and it may not be readily apparent, is that the first 18 inches of the deck railing is proposed with a solid material for privacy purposes, but the remaining railing is stainless steel cable, which will visually open up the deck area. The fourth item is in regard to the scale and mass of the house from Tidelands Park. There's been a lot of consideration of this issue, but I think that the most important point I want to share with you before I begin is that this house has been designed to keep the entire main living area as a single level for medical reasons. As you are aware, it's extremely difficult to find a home in Morro Bay that has most, if all, not all, primary living space on one level. Because of this, the Huffs had planned for some time to find the right property that they could ultimately construct their home with a main living area on a single level and take care of their future needs. Next, I would like to address some of the other items that the Commission raised at the last meeting, which was roof lines. You've asked us to consider the possibility of changing the roof line to run perpendicular to the parking lot rather than parallel. In consultation with the architect, we find that changing the roof orientation will be detrimental to the project for a couple of reasons. First, the ridgeline is meeting the zoning standards at 25 feet above natural grade with a proposed 4 and 12 pitch. If the roof is redesigned, it will exceed the allowable height by 1 foot. The main reason for that height would be as you increase the length of the run or increase the wall dimension in this case, you will also increase the height. Second, the home is a Cape Cod design, which has a roof pitch of not less than 4 and 12. Altering the roof and lowering the pitch will spoil the architectural integrity of this design and will not result in a significant better design. Third, the upstairs bedrooms are designed such that there is no encroachment into the 50-foot setback for the second story, and the height is also within the building height requirements. Last, staff notes in your report that there are five separate ridgelines that are parallel to the parking lot. I would also like to offer that these five separate ridgelines create articulation through the variation in the height and location, and that the other two roof lines are at a different orientation to add visual interest. Next, stepping down the house. The direction I heard in regards to stepping down the house was to consider 3 to 4 feet and making it a split level. As I mentioned, the proposed design is to avoid any stairs on the main living area for medical reasons. So changing the design to a split-level house won't address those concerns. Second, in response to staff's notation that this is a two-story house with a basement, yes, the design does incorporate the other levels, but this is also done so that they have additional room for guests and also that the rec room and wine cellar below fits their needs. However, this does not change the point that they really need the main living area on one level. Third, I'd like to put into context my response that is in your Exhibit D in your report. After submitting the revisions to staff, I got an email from them that they had reviewed the plans and indicated that the plans don't show that the additional grading is necessary if the home was stepped down and that the topography shows that the proposed location of the front door at the existing 26-foot elevation, which means you can in fact lower the elevation of the home 2 feet with no grading at all or very little. In order to provide an accurate response to this comment, I contacted the architect and asked for assistance in determining what consequences would be and if it was possible to lower the house the 2 feet as staff suggested, hence my detailed answer to the staff. I hope that you've had time to read my response, but I think it's important to make sure that we have clarity on these issues and the constraints that it is not simply a matter of redesigning a house. The Huffs have not done structural house plans to date, but rather the architect had preliminary discussions with the engineer when he first started designing this home. The engineer pointed out that the finished grade of the pavement, which is actually about 2 feet beyond the end of the accessway for fire department reasons, is at a 28-foot elevation. So in order for the house to have the proper access into the driveway and the garage, it needs to remain at this elevation. As a side note, the architect that had originally planned a 6-12 pitch for the roof but found out that he could not make that design work without exceeding the building height standards. He discussed with the engineer the possibilities of changing the accessway but found out that it would require a substantial alteration to the existing accessway. To get just 6 inches lower and maintain that required 15% slope, the driveway and the turnaround would have to be removed all the way back to the parallel parking space. To get 2 feet lower, you would need to remove the entire accessway and turn around nearly 300 feet all the way to Main Street. In addition to the accessway, the utilities that are in the area would also need to be lowered. With that information, the architect designed the house as you see today. I also described other scenarios in my response regarding the change in the elevation of the house without changing the garage and staff's inquiry about lowering the house so that there wouldn't be as many steps to walk down to the basement. Since all of this material has been included in your report, I won't take time to cover each one of the points in detail other than to say that any one of those changes could result in not meeting the building code. It would not lower the house but 6 to 12 inches. It would only add additional grading. It would be an extreme financial hardship. And the change in the overall design, I don't know if anybody would really be happy with. All in all, I believe that the information provided to you in both letters and what I shared tonight shows that the design was not done without careful consideration of the Huff's future needs and the city standards, the site limitations, and reasonable and feasible modifications. In closing, I would like to say that the Huffs have spent considerable time and effort since the last meeting to consider your suggestions. We have reviewed the residential design guidelines and provided thoughts on the conformance with these, even though that this home was designed prior to your discussion on these design ideas. We have also looked at the neighborhood compatibility with the surrounding area because it is made up of what is characterized by staff as newer residential construction, which is typically two-story and more than 2,500 square feet, in a recent report for you for the 505 Walnut home. It is our belief that this home is consistent with the other homes in the immediate area and adjacent area, especially for the size home in relation to the size of the lot. Last, the Huffs would like to also ask the Commission to understand that the main living space as one level is the crucial part of their home. They have worked hard to get a design that not only meets the city's standards but exceeds those standards for lot coverage, setbacks, and building height by applying standards that are not a part of this project and the last that it is consistent with the LCP. We have come back with important requested information that the Commission had from the last meeting and I hope this answers your questions. On behalf of the Huffs, I would respectfully ask the Commission for your support and approval of this home as presented tonight. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. or is there anyone else who is interested in commenting on this item?
My name is Betty Winholtz, and I live on Acacia, which is the cross street with this property, so it is in my neighborhood. I did comment on this the last time it was before you, and I'd like to bring up one of those items which I don't think the commission got a chance to address, and that was public access. One of the issues that city staff has pressed my area to have is that we need to have some kind of access down to the water primarily or to tidelands. Our closest access is down on Olive Street, which is about quarter of a mile, or over at Bayshore Bluffs, which is about the same distance or a little bit more. With the asphalted driveway that serves all four houses here, it goes all the way down the hill and would be a logical public access way for people to be able to access actually tidelands rather than just end up in the water. So I would like for you to consider that. Second of all, I do want to remind you, and I did send you an email reminding you that this is a PD overlay, plan development overlay, and that you have a discretion here to keep this in character with our neighborhood, with the specialness of our neighborhood, because we are in that special Zone B. And just in referring to the bulk and size and scale, you know, this is they're going to have four houses on their properties, and so for them to say this is the house is really hard for the neighborhood to believe that. And so because they've had opportunity all the way along to do a one-story house, if that's what they really want. So for us, you know, mass is real important in our area because we don't have large houses. They've brought in 3,000-square-foot houses. Mostly people in our neighborhood have 2,000 or less, believe it or not, and because we're older homes. And so if it's real important to them to have, you know, one-story house, then maybe the second floor needs to come off. Something to reduce that appearance of just this massive thing, whether it's from Main Street or Tidelands, is really out of character with our neighborhood. And so I'd like for you to consider maintaining our character. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? At this time, we'll close public comment and bring it back to the commission for questions. Ahead, Jerry.
Can we open public comment again so I could ask the applicant?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Kathy? Ms. Novak? What is at the end of the edge of asphalt at the west end of the driveway? What is the elevation there?
28.5.
And what is the distance to the entryway from the closest corner of the existing asphalt now to the
garage?
To the entry, the front door.
I'd need to grab the plans and take a look at that.
Okay.
Looks like it's a little about maybe 10 feet, a little less than 10 feet.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you.
It's going to be a little bit less than 10 feet because it's 10 feet down to the garage, and so the entryway is not quite all the way to the edge of the garage, so probably more about 7.
Yeah, it's just really hard to tell on the plans where the overhang is and stuff and where the front door would essentially be. So.
Sure. So if you're looking at the sheet 1... If you see edge of asphalt, then you'll see the parking space, and then the entryway is going to be just between the edge of the asphalt and the garage door. And when you compare it to sheet A1,
okay,
you'll see on sheet A1 where the entry is just east of the garage. So just it shows 12 feet, a little over 12 feet from the edge of the garage door to the edge of the house, and the entryway is in between those two.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Sure.
Are there any other questions for Ms. Novak? At this time, we'll bring it back to the commission and close public comment. Richard, do you want to start?
My comments are pretty brief. I just don't see, first of all, the fact that this is a PD overlay. We have to take a little bit closer look. And regarding this project being before we had the guidelines or not, this is irrelevant. This is today. And I feel that this could be done better, and I don't see a significant bulk and scale reduction here. I would like to also see looking into getting access all the way through and see if we can get access for emergency vehicles or whatever, you know, public access all the way through. I think that would be of benefit if at least entertain that.
Commissioner Lucas.
Well, I thought it was a really comprehensive response to our questions, which I appreciated. It makes it very clear where they feel the positions are. I mean, I've designed probably three houses for people with different physical abilities, and I appreciate the concern about living on one level. But none of the one-level house seems to be designed for anyone aged or in a wheelchair or anything else. It's not designed as some of the ADA kinds of criteria would suggest you want to have for someone who may have less mobility or different mobility. There's a huge number of design things that I'm really very confused about when I hear that as one of the rationale. I have no doubt in my mind you could go from behind the garage across the back of the powder room, closet, office, and drop that back section at least 2 feet. And I think if you put that tide lens side, I think the house toward Main Street is a very nice representation of the style. I'm not a person drawn to any style. If I have a style I like, it's the modern aesthetic of the house next door. Can you go back to that elevation from Tidelands? And I think the difference between this house and the house next door is this type of design fundamentally looks massive. If you look at the house next door, it dissolves into the pieces and the glass. And so, you know, a heavy timber house that's in that modern vocabulary fundamentally looks like it's kind of light and floating as opposed to the way this builds up out of the ground. And those 5 and 6 foot crawl spaces underneath the main part of the house just add to this mass that you see from Tidelands. So if this wasn't the terminus of one of our public pieces along the waterfront, I'd be less concerned about it. If this was the way that I'd look at it from a neighbor's house on a typical street, I don't think I'd have a concern about it. But it is the way we're ending the city. I appreciate the withdrawal of the deck. It's a significant reduction in the deck. If you look at the site plan, it's going to expose a swale in the site that I think will be it's already an extremely attractive design feature, and I think it'll be a wonderful feature. And I think that opens up some of the viewways from some of the neighbors. But my concern is from this point of view, especially the house is still very massive, and I wish there was a way to negotiate the split level, you know, 4 or 5 feet difference. I can understand, but you know, for a house designed for someone without the ability for stairs, I don't see the stairs respecting some kind of apparatus that would climb the stairs, or the way that landings necessarily have to be larger and things like that. So I respect that the client has a potential different ability, but I don't see that logic played out in the way that the house is designed. And I think the image that we're seeing here just still strikes me as very massive. If we moved 5 feet away to the right of this picture, you'd see the glass underneath the part of the house on the left. And that's the thing that concerns me the most, because then it gives the appearance from Tidelands of a three-story house. And that's very concerning to me.
Commissioner Lehr.
You know, at the westernmost point of the house, well, let me ask staff to clarify our responsibilities regarding the PD overlay in this district or in this area, or is this a PD in the PD overlay?
Yes, it is a PD overlay.
Okay,
so
what are our additional responsibilities for that? Can you explain to the public, please?
Certainly. So as private property that's less than 1 acre in size, it requires an elevated heightened review process by Planning Commission. In layman's terms, the Planning Commission essentially acts as architectural review. So it is within the authority of the Planning Commission to review landscaping, lighting, architectural design. Those properties that are public properties, like on the waterfront, when we frequently say those are in a plan development overlay, those come in as two-step approvals, a concept and a precise plan, because this is a small piece of private property. What Planning Commission does is a combined concept precise plan. So in a sense, you're approving a precise approval, and that's why there is those extra detailed requirements.
Okay. Well, thanks for the clarification on that. As far as my comments go, you know, we have a 7 foot from finished floor to grade on the western edge. There's been no, you know, they shortened the deck, which I appreciate, and that was an effort on their part, but there's been no effort at all to accommodate our comments from the last meeting at all. There's plenty of solutions. I can come up with 3 or 4 different solutions to how you could have a universal design, an ADA accessible house here without reducing the floor plan, the footage at all. I guess I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
I also want to thank the applicants for their attempts to change the mass and scale of the house by changing the decks and making 2 decks instead of 1. I also was the one who was really quite concerned about the numbers and the square footage and making sure that that was correct, and I appreciate the clarity on those numbers. I still am very concerned on the view from the Tidelands, how large the house looks, and I believe, you know, I am feeling the same, Commissioner Lucas. It does look like a three-story home from here. So I'm very uncomfortable with the design as it is shown. Cindy, could you go through our options at this point in time? I believe you had a slide on them.
Certainly. So staff has prepared 4 options. The first option, to approve the project as outlined in Resolution 3915 with those findings and conditions as presented to you. Option 2, what I'm hearing from the Planning Commission is that the applicant didn't go far enough in making design revisions. The Planning Commission could impose additional conditions if they wish to make an approval tonight. Or option 3, the Planning Commission could continue the hearing, asking for additional modifications to bulk and scale and other items as you identify. And then the last option, to find that it does not meet the requirements of the city's general plan and local coastal plan under the PD overlay requirements as well, deny the project, and then direct staff to return with a resolution for denial.
At this time, I'd like to have some discussion among the commissioners and your feelings on the different options. Commissioner Lucas?
Well, I don't want to impose conditions as number two shows. I don't feel comfortable with number one. So to me, it's between three and four. And I think the applicant has basically said they don't want to, you know, listen to the criticism. So I'm open to number four at this point.
I agree. I think that we need, you know, the staff spends enough time, you know, dealing with these things. And I'm pretty strongly option four.
Commissioner Lehr.
I'm really reluctant to do this also. I thought there was a good conversation to improve this project, but evidently it wasn't taken to heart. This is a really important site. This site is going to be seen by a lot of people from Tidelands Park. It's out of character with the neighborhood, and it's in the PD overlay district. So for that reason, I would support denial of the project, and I think that their best option is to appeal to the city council. But I would like to ask if, you know, to have the applicant come forward and see what they would like to, what their preference would be.
I'd like to reopen public comment and welcome Ms. Novak back to the podium.
At this point in time, we'll just go ahead and do option four for you to deny it and then have the staff bring back findings.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, Cindy, Scott, how do we go about that? Need a motion.
Motion and a second and a vote, and then direct us to bring back the resolution for denial at the next meeting.
Okay. May I have a motion?
I move we reject the project as proposed.
Second. No.
Right, I'll second.
Thank you. And at this point in time, I'd like to have a roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Commissioner Sadowski?
Aye.
Commissioner Lehr?
Aye.
Vice Chairperson Sorensen?
Aye.
Motion for denial passes 4-0. Thank you.
And you'll have a resolution at the next meeting?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
AGP.
Hard work. Well, I'm back with you, and we'll move on to item number B5, which has to do with this is also a continued item, I believe. Oh, I'm sorry, B4. Yes, thank you very much. B4, case number UP0. Would you guys like a break? Are you? Yeah? Okay, it's 8:15 a little bit, so why don't we take a 10-minute break and catch your breath, and we'll be back at 8:25. Good evening and welcome back to the continued Planning Commission meeting. We will proceed on to public hearing item number B4, which is case number UP0-428 concerning a property at 300 Shasta Avenue. And again, I'll ask if anyone has ex parte communications to report. None? Then I believe that Whitney is going to talk to us about this one.
Thank you, Commissioners. As you noted, this is a conditional use permit request. The applicants are requesting approval for a conforming addition to a non-conforming single-family residence. The project proposes to add approximately 930 square feet of a second-story addition to an existing house that's about 1,874 square feet. Virtually no change is proposed to the exterior footprint of the first floor. The existing single-story residence is considered non-conforming because it has a 10-foot front yard setback where 20 feet is otherwise required. The slide that's up on the screen right now is an aerial, and the house is approximately in the middle of the screen, right where Shasta comes down and makes a fairly sharp turn. So it does, in fact, have two street frontages. And I had this fun little circle around the lot, but you can hardly see it from here, which is a little bit sad. But anyway, it's right there. And this may be a little more clear. The lot is colored yellow on this assessor's parcel map. And just using this slide, you can see that it does have two street frontages, even though, strangely, it's the same street. It's a corner lot on the same street. But our zoning regulations define the front of a lot, which is a corner lot or has more than one street frontage, as the front of the lot is the one that's the narrowest. And so in this case, it's the northern part that faces onto Shasta right there. This is a site plan and shows the footprint, but it also shows the front. Oh, I'm running into something here. The required setback on this narrow portion of the lot is 20 feet, and the garage, one of the garages, extends into that area. So, therefore, the whole structure becomes nonconforming, even though it's really logical the way the house was situated. But this is just one of those kind of odd cases. So here's a shot of the house as it exists now. And what did I want to tell you about that? So you can see that it is kind of logical the way that it faces on the longer side of Shasta. There's a lot of grade right where it makes that turn. However, regulations are what they are in this case. So the proposed design is to add a second story. This also serves as the color board. Proposed colors are essentially kind of a warm gray, light on the walls, darker on the trim and the roof. They're proposing new windows throughout, which are an even lighter gray color, shingled roof. And the design continues to use the shed roof style roofing that sort of already exists with the existing house. This is just an elevation drawing of the same thing you were looking at, essentially. The way that the different planes of the house are shaded, you kind of can get the idea of there are a number of different planes. The garage comes forward, the middle part of the downstairs comes forward a little bit more than the part off to the right. There's a deck up above proposed, and so part of that wall would set back. And just quickly, the north side elevation, which is required to meet our front setback standards, the south side elevation. So you can see from this that the second story is doesn't cover the whole footprint, obviously, but it's more centered. And then the rear elevation, which faces east, there's a, sort of a courtyard created between the garage and an addition that was done at the same time the garages were. The project does, with the exception of the front setback, the project does meet all of our zoning development, site development standards. In fact, it's kind of a nice large lot, and so coverage is less than the 40% allowed. It's 26%. And because the house was designed with the to have a front facing on the longer side, the exterior side yard setback is 20 feet, where 10 feet would otherwise be required. And also in the rear, zoning standards only require 5 feet, and theirs is roughly 12, I think. Am I reading this right? 10, anyway. Oops. And then just a final slide of the existing house. Staff feels that although it is it's kind of a large house, again, we keep having these large house conversations. This one does have the advantage of, as I said, the long side sitting back further than it might otherwise be required to. And then there's also the undeveloped right-of-way kind of in part of that sloped area that you can see that adds, helps kind of reduce apparent massing by setting it, again, back further into the lot. The lot itself is about 9,500 square feet, I believe, and the addition is, the wall planes of the addition sort of help to, again, not have it just be one big massive thing. So we are recommending approval. We feel that the addition is fairly logical given what's the existing architecture. And not to belabor the point, I will be really happy to answer your questions.
Thank you, Whitney. Any questions for staff? Michael?
Why don't we have a three-dimensional representation on a site that has people descending onto it from Shasta up high, moving up into it laterally? I mean, this is one of the most complicated three-dimensional sites I think we've seen here, with an extremely large addition on it. And I can't believe we don't have a three-dimensional view.
Like a corner rendering from below? Is that what you're suggesting?
I'd like to see something frontal from Shasta and from Shasta. I mean, I looked at this site three times, and I'm looking at these drawings. I've had 40 years of looking at things like this. And I'm telling you, this one's tough because I don't have a good idea whether or not the neighbors are impacted by this. Part of me wants... I'm commenting. The question was, we don't
Why don't we have a rendering? Well, that is a very good question. And as we keep getting that question, we will keep passing that question on to applicants and their designers who, in this particular case, noted that, we have an existing house and the addition is going to basically look like the existing house. And so here's my pictures of the existing house. And so thank you very much for your question.
Any other?
Yeah. Whitney, we had a, back in the dark ages, we had a project where we had similar, a similar situation. We had a large house that was, and then we had a narrow frontage and a long frontage. And at that point, the best solution was basically to designate the long frontage as the front yard. Do we have that option on this? And if we did, would this project have come before us? It seems like it meets all of the other setback requirements. It was designed at a time when the Shasta, the long side, was essentially the front yard. Would we have even seen this?
If the long side of Shasta had been designated a front per our zoning ordinance,
you would not be looking at this project right now. It totally otherwise meets the zoning ordinance standards. And furthermore, those that garage, that offending garage over here, that was approved with a variance in 1988. So even at that time, we had our zoning ordinance, and it called out. Generally, I would back up and say, in defense of our zoning ordinance, that it's to the advantage of the property owner to have the more narrow part of the lot considered the front, because that requires a greater setback. So generally speaking, it's a nice thing. In this case, doesn't really make a lot of sense given the topography and the shape of the lot.
And all facility. It seems also it's adjacency to the other houses on the street.
It is lower than houses behind it who will have their views impacted. I did speak with, there is a duplex building behind this site, and I did speak with the owner of that building, and I believe it was the other resident. And while they were concerned about impacts to their views, they looked at the plans. They felt that the plans made sense and made sense in terms of the existing architecture and as an extension of the existing architecture, that they're fairly clean and well-balanced and did not have, like, a further objection to the project.
Any, Whitney, do you know, so this was never, there was never a time when the western side was actually designated as a front yard on this lot? Otherwise, a variance wouldn't have been required, right?
The house itself was built in 1953, the original part of the house, and it originally faced, you know, the long side of the lot. That was before we were even a city.
Right.
So we came along and had our zoning ordinance. At the time, though, I'm not exactly sure, but the original house, I believe, included this one garage and was kind of this shape or something like that. You know, it was right here. This was an addition that was done together with this other garage in 1988. Mm-hmm. So apparently, when it was built in 1953, I mean, I don't know, county rules would have applied, and I'm not sure what they would have been. But logic sort of dictated where it went in my mind.
So my understanding, the way it sits right now, it was granted an exemption in your mind?
My understanding is it was granted an exemption for these additions, correct?
Well, because of the standard that we're sort of up against right again now, the front yard call, and because they were doing an addition that was going to require a second garage, and the logical place for them at the time, given this gets very steep and there's already a driveway, was this area right here. And in order to do that, they were granted a variance. So the city sort of looked at it and said, yeah, that's probably the best place to put your garage in. It makes sense here. But nonetheless, it remains a nonconforming structure.
Okay, if there's no other questions for staff, this is a public hearing item, and we'd like to open it up for the public. Typically, we'd like to ask the applicant or applicant's representative to speak first.
Good evening, commissioners. Oh, is that on? Good evening, and my name is Kathleen Bergantzel, and I am the draftsman who drew up the drawings. As you can see, there really was no other place for me to put a second story. And it is what the owners want. They have currently two small bedrooms and a master, and what they're doing is removing one of the bedrooms downstairs and enlarging the main area, and then putting a couple bedrooms and another family area and a deck upstairs to suit their needs. And, yeah, if it wasn't for that garage that overhangs the quote-unquote front yard, we would not be here because it is set back more than 20 feet on the main section that faces west as opposed to the front yard, which is the part that faces north. Any other questions? Would you?
We'll stick around in case.
I'm not going anywhere until we're done.
Okay. Any other members of the public that would like to speak to this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to commission for discussion.
Richard, why don't you start us off on this one?
Nobody, we haven't picked on you in a while.
Okay. I would have to concur with Michael on having a 3D on this one. I did walk it. At least maybe we've done these polls before, you know, where you can kind of like get a little bit more of a visual, especially on the lot. Just on a general note, I'm not opposed to the project, but it would be helpful for a visual. This is more of a staff thing where, you know, especially when it's challenging like that, it'd be nice to have that. Because even for, like, having something like that, we could see what kind of view, you know, with the views and stuff. And it's a great street to ride your bike on, you know, but it is a challenging little section there to try to visualize.
It's only great when you're going north. Michael.
Kathleen, can you come back up?
We'll reopen the public comment.
We're reopening, I guess, yeah. First of all, I think you're one of the more interesting people we have bring projects for. You have.
I seem to get them. I don't know
I think
why.
I'm very serious. You seem to have all these really quirky houses, and you do, I think, amazing things with them. I mean, I love everything I see here.
Well, thank you.
But I can't figure out the massing, and that's my problem. Are you working in software? You can three-dimensionalize things easily?
I work in AutoCAD, but I've never done the three-dimensional part.
Have you gone into Revit and tried to do it? Okay.
No. I was a hand draftsman long ago, so I mean, this even using AutoCAD, I'm just amazed I can use it.
Okay. Well, that lets me know. I mean, my sense is that when I look at it really carefully, I like the way the existing house sits on the lot. If I thought about suggesting pushing it back, I think the people behind would be impacted.
The street does, you go up the street and then it does this and goes up again.
Yeah.
So these people up here, I mean, they're up there.
Yeah.
So we're down here and it's up here.
Yeah, I know. I just want to know about the 3D thing. That helps. Now, my basic comments are, as I said, you know, she's using the vocabulary of the house. I love that style of the house. That early 50s things to me is one of the things that gives you the most freedom to do things. You've got lots of very simple window patterns. Yeah. I hope some of them open. I mean, the one thing about modernism that I think is a concern, it's in some of our criteria, is a lot of the modern movement things were meant about large panes of glass that don't operate. You know, so seeing windows open actually shows you somebody's there. You know, so the occupation of that deck and some other things, but I tend to like what you're doing quite a bit. I'm just not sure of the mass relative to everything around it. That's why I wanted to know about the three-dimensional things.
Yeah, sorry.
And that's
that.
The only thing I've got a question on. That's really my only comments.
Okay.
Catherine? Oh, I like the project, and I'm supportive of it. And in normal cases, it wouldn't even be here. So I'm in support.
Jerry?
I have a couple questions for you. Sorry, keep making you hike.
I've been sitting long enough.
Okay, those chairs are not very comfortable either. One of the things I don't see and I'm a little concerned about, and this is just a, you know, the point of information, is mechanical. You know, I don't see where the laundry room is going to be. I'm concerned it's going to be put in the small garage and impact the garage space. Also, how are you going to handle the HVAC on this? I don't see a place for a water heater or your HVAC.
There is existing HVAC in the house, and there's existing water heater. I'm not exactly sure where they want to move it to at this point. We were trying to decide that.
Okay. Well, the reason I would like to see it is because if it goes into one of the garages, then it's going to impact the parking area for that garage.
Yeah, and the forced air unit would not go in the garage. It would probably go over the existing master bedroom due to the fact that there's a nice big space back there for
it. You have an enclosed attic space there?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Those are things that concern me, too.
Yeah.
You know, on this. And it would be helpful for me to see that, you know, laid out on the plans. Also, I don't see a roof plan. Am I missing that in my plans?
There isn't one. We're adding on to where we go up. That's the only place where there's going to be a new roof, and it does this. So
yeah, well, you know, it's helpful to show that on the plans.
Okay.
You know, that's I think that's actually one of the required drawings. Okay. I think it would also help Commissioner Lucas with the Massey, especially, you know, and that's usually typically shown on the site plan.
Okay.
You know, so other than that, I like the vocabulary. I like how you utilize that, you know, that architectural style and made it consistent.
It's a little different because trusses don't lend themselves to a 2-in-1 pitch real well.
Oh, yeah. No. No, it's stick frame.
Yes.
So, but I think on your, you know, the next quirky project you bring forward, I think if you could tighten up those details, it would help. It would help us to visualize the project and would help make sure that the project, you know, is complete.
Okay.
So,
I agree that it would be helpful to have more visual representation. We have the photograph here, but then we have to kind of imagine the second story on top of it.
I did do an overlay at one time where it had the second floor shown. It didn't want to line up right? Okay. All right. I did do it, though.
Yeah. I'm very familiar with the site. I think the way you've handled the second story, to me, breaking it up with the deck in front is going to be helpful, you know, visually. And I think this is, you know, the two-story style is the way that the neighborhood is gradually going. There are a lot of older single-story houses that are still existing in the neighborhood, but, you know, this is definitely the trend. And so, you know, I see the logic of the way the house is laid out. I mean, I see it. If it were my house, I'd want it to face the ocean too, you know? I don't really have any issues with this. So, if there's no further discussion, do we have a motion?
I find the right thing.
I move to approve resolution number PC 7-15 to allow an addition to a nonconforming residential structure at 300 Shasta Avenue.
I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion and we have a second. Do we have any discussion?
I'm going to vote no, only because I want a representation on every project that comes before us. Pure and simple.
Since we're in discussion, how would we go about adding that to the list of requirements?
Well, it'll probably take a little bit of discussion. It's kind of interesting that you pointed out on this project. This is one of the ones that came in that I struggled with. I went out there two different times. I think we requested a couple of changes to the plans originally, and I went out there and walked around the site, looked up, you know, and we were debating on whether we were going to require additional information. Looked at what impacts it could potentially have, saw that there were probably views from any of the houses that were back there that went out to the sides, and we said, well, it's a 500-foot radius we're going to send it out to, and we'll see what people respond back to and go from there. We didn't get any responses that were to the negative that I recall, no. And so,
We did get an email. Uh-huh.
That's right.
Hi. And she had some concerns about this being so large. And also a question about the zoning ordinance allowing this. In fact, it does, and she is citing a section of the code that wouldn't apply to this project. It's a very confusing section, though, the nonconforming.
Yeah.
My only concern is if we were down in the beach block and, you know, it's kind of frontal, that maybe that's not the biggest thing you need three-dimensionalization on, but this is such a dynamic site, and the neighbors are potentially so. I would be very concerned if I was a neighbor, and we've had other ones close by that were much more contentious. That I just think there's certain when we get to the doing the districts. This I'm sure this district is going to have some kind of level of review that's almost going to be on every lot. I mean, this is one of those things that it's not a subdivision that laid out with a singular style, with the same kind of massing. It's really different. So it's not the cloisters, and it's not the beach block. And I think that I just don't want to set a precedent that we have something of that dynamic character that doesn't have. We've had other projects, I think, very unfortunately pushed forward under other administrations that did not have adequate representation. And had they, I think they would have gone another way. So I don't think this one's bad. This is not anything negative about this project, other than I think it's a kind of precedent. And I don't even want to, I want my colleagues to vote for it. But if they trust it. But I don't trust it. Okay. And I think we should be more demanding about when people come forward. This isn't a 900 square foot house that we're putting a 300 square foot addition on. This is a large home that we're putting a large addition on, and that means it has mass implications. And there are people who may not have the visualization capabilities to understand the impacts of something with traditional media. And that's the only reason I've said this probably when I was on the commission before. I got flack for saying things like this, that some projects require it. I just think this is one. That's all.
Could I ask you something, Scott? On the, you know, the guidelines that we use in the neighborhood compatibility, bulk and scale, could we lace something in there that maybe if something was granted or is conforming or was granted an exception before, maybe we can do something that would trigger a three-dimensional or something like that.
Okay, getting back to the three-dimensional thing, I didn't really answer the question. Went off on a tangent and never got back. Before I came here, I was actually used to seeing three-dimensional drawings, and then when I came here, we rarely get them. Now we get them on maybe when there are large projects or new homes. Maybe half of them come in with it. It was a tool that was utilized by most in, you know, where I used to work. And I think most folks found it to be a selling tool for the house. Not only could they lay it out on the exterior, they could lay it on the interior. That was helpful for the owners that were building it and whatnot to see how things laid out. They could basically do walkthroughs through it, you know, I mean, on a computer. So they were being used more and more and more, and I think that's kind of where things are going. Now, can we add that as a submittal requirement on certain types of projects? We can. I would just ask that we take a look at it internally for a little bit and then bring this back as an agendized item to discuss, because I'd like to come back with some options for you about when that might be appropriate and when it might not. So... Yeah. I mean, I think that would be probably the best way to do it, to have a fixed discussion on the agenda with the Planning Commission about that specific thing. Maybe we can look at the overall submittal checklist so you can take a look at what is required. I don't know that you're all that familiar with it. I don't know. So that might be something you can give me some direction to either now or maybe at the end of the meeting tonight.
So we do, however, have a motion and a second on the table and kind of a far-reaching discussion. If there's no further comments on this project, could we have a roll call?
Commissioner Sorensen.
Aye.
Commissioner Sadowski.
Aye.
Commissioner Lucas.
No, with an asterisk.
Commissioner Lohr.
Yes.
Chairman Tubb?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-1 with an asterisk.
Maybe 4.5-1/2. Okay. Moving on to item B5. This is case number NA, having to do with the vacant lot on Mindoro Street that we spoke of previously. And I believe that Scott is going to soldier on with this one.
So at the last meeting, we discussed the disposition of the Mindoro lot. That is a city-owned lot the city is looking to sell. And before the city can dispose of any property, the Planning Commission has to weigh in on the compatibility or consistency with the general plan. In looking through it and having that discussion at the previous Planning Commission meeting, items were brought up related to what could actually fit on the lot. It was pointed out that there's a water line there, but no easement. And so I suggested that we continue the item to this meeting to see if I couldn't answer some of those questions and bring back maybe an example of what the buildable footprint might be. Well, when I went back and looked at it, I pulled the APN maps. I tried to get a copy of the original map that created the lot, and we have that, but it doesn't show the Highway 1 right-of-way. And that happens to be one of the gaps right where this is at, where Mindoro is, where we don't have one of Caltrans's map to show where the edge of it is. So that kind of went out the window. I mean, I could have laid it out on an APN map, but those things are notoriously inaccurate, and I wasn't going to base any recommendation to you on something that I wasn't sure was actually correct. So I spoke with Public Works Director Rob Leivick, and he was already in the process of having a survey done. We're going to be setting property corners over there anyway. So we'll get a survey as part of that. He's entered into a contract, I believe, with MBS Land Surveys. And so we should have something within the next couple of weeks. So based on that, I'm asking that you continue this item to a date to be determined, because I don't have the survey in my hands yet. And as soon as we get it, I'll bring it back to the first available meeting.
Any questions for us? Do we have a clear location on the water line? Do we know?
Oh, we did. We had the water department go out there and take a look at it. It's about 1.5 feet off the fence on the property side. It sits, about 1.5 feet off of it, and it's about 1'8" deep where they potholed it. So it's not very deep, which is good and bad. I mean, it allows you to have a reduced easement, because we're probably going to place an easement on it ourselves. So that'll be taken into consideration when I bring back that buildable footprint, so you have an idea about what the house square footage could be.
And this is how big a water line?
I believe it's 6".
Oh, okay.
And we're 1'8" deep?
That's what they told me when they walked in my office and said that, yes.
It's just a dusting over it.
Yes. I was a little surprised at that myself when he told me.
Huh. Yeah, you could hit that with a fence post.
Yeah.
Or trying to remove a tree, for example. Okay, so I will ask if there have been any ex parte communications on this item. Seeing none. Do we have a motion to continue this?
You should take public comment.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. And this is a public hearing item, so if there's anyone here who would like to speak to this item, please come forward.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hello.
I'm Lindsay Castro.
Thank you for your patience.
Oh, thank you. I'm here with my husband, Doug Castro, and we're here tonight just to state our interest in the Mindoro Street property. Did you want to say? Okay. We submitted an offer on the property on Friday, September 18th, 2015, and we understand that there are limitations and restrictions to the property, and we're willing to work within the building parameters. Finding affordable housing on the Central Coast is very difficult, and we're ready to take on the challenge of building a small home on the Central Coast. We're from Bakersfield, California, and I'm an elementary school teacher, and my husband is a concert promoter. And we have two small children, ages 3 and 1. For the past year and a half, we've been actively searching on the Central Coast for the perfect lot to relocate our family to. Nothing would make us happier than being a part of this amazing community here in Morro Bay. So, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Did you come all the way from Bakersfield for this meeting? Wow. Well, definitely thank you. Okay. In that case, I kind of apologize for it being continued. However, we don't have the information that we need right now to deal with it. So given that, do we have a motion to continue?
I move we continue. I didn't see the item number, but I move that we continue this item to a date uncertain.
Second.
So we have a motion, a second. Any discussion on the motion? If not, oh, sorry.
All proposed houses should have a three-dimensional view.
So all proposed continuances should have a three-dimensional we have a motion, we have a second. Could we have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Sorensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Luhr?
Yes.
Commissioner Sadowski?
Aye.
Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Chair Taft?
Aye.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. So we have no unfinished business, and we have no new business tonight. Do we have any comments from planning commissioners?
No, I was just going to say I'm glad the couple came, because I think it shows, I see incredible value in that lot, and I'm very anxious to see what this shows. But I think this is important to have them come and say these things. So I appreciate you coming.
Is there, maybe this is not in our, well, let me just throw this out. Is there a way that for a future agenda item, I would like to have a discussion, and if this is, of course, with the commission's approval, about, it's a real concern of mine is the vacation rentals and the effects on our infrastructure, and I think it's something that maybe we need to at least have a discussion about in public.
You want to have an agendized discussion about vacation rentals as it relates to city infrastructure?
I've got, excuse me, can I jump in?
Sure.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Scott, but
It's rarely that I agree with Richard. I wanted to bring this up. And then also, you know, I had a discussion with somebody that they looked on Airbnb. And actually, it was my wife. So, and there were over 300 listings on Airbnb for Morro Bay, including some of them saying, you know, they created their own private entrances. And so I would like to include in that discussion, you know, situations where, you know, I imagine we're having situations out there with fire code violations and health and safety issues, you know, where you're cutting off HVAC and creating carbon monoxide in certain areas, you know, the potential for doing that, because these places probably have, for one thing, they probably don't have a business license, and the second thing, they probably didn't.
I doubt that. Okay. Oh, we've contracted with the Mass folks. They pay attention to those websites regularly, so
great.
The chances of any of those slipping by is about zero.
But if there's been any bootlegged in, you know, additions or reconfigurations, it would be nice to know that just for health and safety. That's all I'm concerned about on that, if there's any way. So, and parking also is another factor.
Noise.
But noise, there's a lot of factors involved. But
I'm not against agendizing it. I'm just wondering what would come out of it. I mean, I just as a general discussion topic, do you want staff to do something? I mean, we can agendize the different things. Is there things that you would want us to bring to the table, or do we just want to start the discussion and then we'll see where it goes and then maybe we bring stuff back? Is that more like it?
Well, I think you know, for me, it just, you know, this is off just in, you know, I haven't thought it through all the way, but in thinking, in hearing his comment, that came up to me that, you know, that was a, you know, it was a shocking figure. So what I would like to see is to start the discussion. Maybe this might be something that might need to be put into the LCP, you know, in the general plan. You know, if they're, you know, this is the wave of the future. So, you know, I think we need to at least have a discussion about that. What can we do about it?
I'm sorry to interrupt, but
and then, excuse me, just one more thing.
Sure.
Is just the TOT tax also. Because if they're renting these off book, you know, we're losing revenue for the city. And we're having impacts in the city. So that's
I do know that because we contracted, and I think that the contract runs for the next couple of years with the Mass folks, that's what they're going after. They're going after folks that didn't do business licenses. When we initially did it, we didn't advertise it very well and maybe sent out some letters that weren't so friendly, and we got a lot of backlash out of it. But that process is ongoing. I mean, we sort of smoothed some of that out, passed some changes to the business license ordinance, and, you know, are kind of going down the road now. Things seem to be moving a little more smoothly, but I think we just recently sent out another round of letters on it because I heard some folks at the front counter in finance when I was in talking to the human resources folks yesterday talking about it. So it seems like maybe we did that. So that's an ongoing thing that they monitor, like those Airbnb sites, and they monitor vacation rental sites. So those are things that are tracked to some extent.
One of the things that I keep focusing, there's got to be a sense of urgency here with the general plan of the LCP. We just had a WRFCAC meeting, and, you know, the consultants are sitting there waiting too. And there is, when we start looking at areas, okay, there's an area, you remember the old tech school spot over there in North Morro Bay by Del Mar Park, you know, that area? And there's some talk about development there. Now, 2007, the city put out a letter. That 60-40 line, that line, that sewer line there, is already over capacity. Already. So now we have issues. Now it's like, and they said they were going to fix it in 2008. Now, I just came back from Sacramento. There was a great meeting on El Nino. El Nino's here. The data at the equator is it's evident. Now, how severe, we don't know. But these are the kind of things that, you know, we need to bridge a gap maybe between public works and planning a little bit, and maybe this is an element that can help that.
Maybe, but I doubt it. I say that maybe partially joking. The city's position as it stands right now as it relates to the infrastructure and, say, like things like vacation rentals is most vacation rentals tend to place less stress on the infrastructure, not more. This is things that they have, you know, at least anecdotally looked at in the past. And it is something that typically would be dealt, because it's an infrastructure issue, would be dealt with through Public Works Advisory Board and that type of thing, not so much the Planning Commission. Now, the use of vacation rentals, absolutely within the purview of the Planning Commission to take a look at. So maybe we just, you know, get concurrence from all of you, or at least a majority of you. I'd certainly be happy to agendize it, to bring it back in a future agenda item. I need to go look back at the schedule for that. As you're aware, because most of you have responded back to Dana, we are changing meeting dates in November, so I got to look and see what we have, you know, slated for those agendas. But probably within a meeting or two, we could probably get something going if you're interested.
Well, it seems to me that if there's a concern about what's happening with vacation rentals, that the thing to do would be to look at what regulations we have in place now, you know, maybe look at some other cities, how, you know, what regulations they have that, you know, seem to be working, you know, and see if we feel that we could recommend something to the council in terms of changing that. And that wouldn't necessarily have to wait for the general plan process. That could be done.
The Planning Commission can always recommend changes, you know, to the City Council. Whether the City Council decides to do anything with that
right.
is up to them. But, yeah, I mean, that's part of your job, to look at things that maybe need to be fixed and then kind of tackle those as they come up and then see if it's, you know, if the Council's interested in moving those things forward, given the 10 goals and 73 objectives that we already have in place.
Do we have a record, or do we have a overabundance of complaints?
No.
On these?
No. We get them every once in a while. Mm-hmm. Usually that's in relationship to noise, often from a neighbor. Often what we find when we go out there is that they're supposed to have 24-hour contact information, and that sign's been removed. Mm-hmm. or we'll find one that's operating and then it, you know, doesn't have a business license and hasn't gone through the process to be a vacation rental. As soon as they go through that process, usually it's handled by property management company. Property management companies are familiar with the requirements. Those requirements are similar throughout the various cities in the county. And so they're pretty good at providing that contact information and responding because they know that cities will yank the permit that allows them to operate if they're not. If you become a problem, we can solve that. You can no longer be allowed to have a vacation rental. I mean, that's pretty simple. So, but I mean, it's probably worthwhile to go over and show you these what the requirements and the policies are, and that's not a bad thing because that's on TV, so people get to see what the expectation is, you know, and what the requirement is for their operation. I mean, those are all good things for people to see because this is the first time we've talked about vacation rentals since I've been here. And so I've been here for a little over a year now. So,
I don't want to overburden you because you got another thing. But I think it's worth the discussion. I really do. Dialogue is good, transparency and clarity.
Yeah, if I could get three of you to say yes, put it on there. We'll put it on the agenda.
I'm supportive of it being on, as long as it is a focused discussion. Oh, thank you. And that there's an end point. Just to have a general conversation, I don't think is worthwhile. I think it does have to be focused. And
I'll bring you the ordinance and put a little cover page on it. And I mean, it's not going to be a lot of work. We should do that.
Thank you.
To at least start the conversation. Happily.
Yeah, I think there's a general concurrence. Yeah.
All right. I will. I'll put it down, and we'll. And I'll get it on an agenda coming up here within the next few meetings.
And then, can I also take the liberty of making a comment?
That's where we are. That's where we are on the agenda.
Right. You know, we have these signs out now with, you know, the visions. What's your vision for Morro Bay? You know, and I'm. You know, it started off goals, but then it's like, okay, what do you see? And I was given this one magazine by a friend of mine. It's a cultural, it's a Native Americans concern and Indigenous people's concern. And there was this lady that was speaking at the, I can't pronounce her name, so I'm just going to say this lady speaking at the UN. And one of the things that they talked, that she brought up, and I think that it applies to here, is that, you know, it's okay to have a vision, but what do you value? See, when you have a vision, you have to have a balance. What do you value? For instance, now we're looking at maybe wind energy. Oh, if you value this. But if we don't put a value, for some people, if we don't put a value on, like, the whale migration, if you just look at the ocean as a resource and whatever you can get out of it, but if you don't value the environment, I think that we need to kind of have those integrated with the vision, because that will tell you what people come from. If I can may give you an example, I have a friend of mine, a Native American friend, years ago, and it was in Pismo. And he said, you know, when you look at a tree, and if you are the kind of person that looks at and see how many 2x6s and 2x4s you could cut out of it, you're not really thinking like a Native American. You know what I mean? Because that's they just see it as a resource. See, and that's the kind of value thing that we need. We need to integrate those two things. And I think it's, you know, other than, you know, just throwing it out there, I'm not expecting anything back, but I think that when people do give their comments, think about that too.
Yeah, I'm not sure the average caller gets that distinction, Richard, because have you listened to some of the calls? You can go online and listen to them. And the truth of the matter is a lot of the people are giving values. They say what I value is the natural environment, kind of, you know, rather than being more specific than that. So I think some of that information is coming in from the signs.
Yeah, agreed.
I'd like to commend on the planning department staff. I know that a couple of months ago we talked about enlarging the signs when we go out and look at a property and you send the letters out to make them larger. And it really does work, and I want to commend you.
Yeah, great.
They're visible from about two blocks away.
Yeah, I found that, and I've gotten a lot of really positive responses from folks out in the neighborhoods. Like, normally they walk by and not see them because we see your bright yellow signs.
Yeah.
Make sure you come by when the project's done and take them down.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I got it. So, yeah.
I'd hate to be a nag, but I want to bring up something from the past. I really think that as a commission, we ought to have a discussion about the concept of greater than normal public benefit. You know,
it's still on my agenda list. I've not forgotten it.
Okay. I just, because it's going to come up again, you know, and you know, there's, you know, and we ought to have a yardstick that we can say, that's just normal public benefit. You know, it's like, when you come in and say, we're building a new building and it's going to look better than the old building that was there before, that's just normal. You know, that's nothing special. So I think we need to have put those yardsticks together. And I will volunteer, you know, time if it would be useful.
Yeah. Again, it's sitting on, it's on my board. We've had to move it down because we've had some full agendas and then some things ended up falling off, but.
No other comments from the commission? Then it's your turn.
I would speak to the signs that Commissioner Sadowski referenced. Those are the City Voice signs that we have up around town. They're to lend into the vision and values discussion that the General Plan Advisory Committee is having. I think we'll have them up until about the 12th. We have them in 11 locations around town. They did run an article in the Tribune. Unfortunately, the person that wrote the article failed to actually call it themselves. And what you don't know if you don't call it is that it asks you for a location code. So people from the Tribune saw the phone number and started calling it and then couldn't get through because you didn't have a location code. And so what we've been telling folks, if you get to the to call in, if you call in from anything other than one of the locations where the signs are located, if you call in from your house or what have you, then you would use the location code 004. Again, that's location code 004. And we use that. That's for City Hall. And we're saying use that if you're calling from outside so we don't skew the rest of the input because we have location codes for a reason to see where we're getting those responses from. That's an important piece of this to see who we're getting. We have gotten a lot of responses from folks that have not otherwise partook in commenting to the city in any way, shape, or form in the past. We've had a good, there's probably 50 to 75 of them that have called in and said that they've not otherwise, you know, come to planning commission meetings, city council meetings, or provided input via letters or anything like that. So it is proving to be somewhat of a useful tool, and we were hoping to see what we would get this way, given that we get complaints on a fairly regular basis that people don't use computers as much or don't follow what we're doing on computers. And this is a phone call-in, sort of seems like maybe you're going back in technology, but that was the intent, given the demographics for the city of Morro Bay being over 50. So you get a lot of folks that are retired, maybe that don't use technology as much as maybe younger folks do. So it's been an interesting, somewhat of an experiment on that side of things to see what we were going to get, and it seems to be picking up some of those folks that don't normally comment. So we're pretty happy about that. And I don't have anything else beyond that, besides that.
Is it is the information going to be able to be? Are you getting ages and sexes and?
It's not to that extent. No. We asked some very specific questions about whether you're a property owner. I mean, we went over this at the General Plan Advisory Committee, and whether you're or a business owner. You know, whether you've been here for 10 years or not, and then it gives you the opportunity at the end to actually give your input for, you know, and say what you think, where the city should go over the next 20, 25 years, that type of thing. So, and then there's the location information that comes out of it as well. That tags where we're picking it up. Are you picking it up from down on the Embarcadero? Is it over in the Albertsons parking lots? Is it over in the Spencer's parking lot? Where is it at? You know, is it at the Yerba Buena at the end? There's right down there at the beach. There's one over there too. So anyway.
Excellent. Okay, if there are no further comments and no other business, then we will adjourn our meeting to our next regularly scheduled session here on October 20th at the Veterans Building. Thank you very much.